From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gavin's got a fight today. Scott's on the outside. Estilo Talentoso is third. Gavin's going to do it. It wasn't easy, but Gavin won it by almost two in the end. Jackie's Warrior fighting off the challenge of Dream Shake. These two, nose to nose, coming down to the wire. Here's the finish. Jackie's Warrior would not be denied in the Pat Day Mile.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
They're coming down to the line, and it's going to be very close. Oh, that was tight. Pernolium or Domestic Spending, their noses were right on the wire together. The four of them heading to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Beveridge does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Mandaloon was second. Hot Rod Charlie was third. Essential Quality was fourth. 2:01:02 the final time. Bob Beveridge stands alone with seven Derby wins.
It was just an exciting day. Just unbelievable. And, you know, things worked out right all day long. We had a tough Friday, but this business, you just got to keep on going and things will change. And, you know, I'm still flying high. It was just an incredible, incredible weekend. And I'm just so happy for all my connections, all my people that work for me, my crew. It was just a team effort and it's unbelievable.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Well, what a weekend in the Derby City. Both Friday and Saturday, picture-perfect weather conditions, fast main track, firm turf course, and great racing. Start to finish, some unbelievable performances, and certainly the Kentucky Derby, one of those. I'm going to talk more about that throughout the program here this morning. For one white-haired trainer, and for one Hall of Fame jockey from Puerto Rico, it was a magical weekend in Louisville last weekend. And, of course, you heard all that action with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We were proud and privileged to bring it to you again. Hello again, everybody out there in HRN Nation. Good morning and welcome to a post-Derby edition of the show that launched this network. It is the Equine Forum, and it's presented all month long by our friends at FarmPaint.com, and it's all right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. And it is going to be a very busy and hopefully a highly entertaining journey for you this morning. But let's start with this. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? That's our poll question this morning, and you can let me know your thoughts at HRRN on Twitter or Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you're not a social media person, you can email the show and let me know your opinion. Mike@horseracingradio.net. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? He certainly is when it comes to the Kentucky Derby. That is now indisputable. And you can make the case that Bob Baffert should have at least one or two more Derby wins to his credit. Cavaneer, his first Derby starter in 1996, who gets beat a zop on the wire. Bodemeister, who coughed up a three-length lead in mid-stretch in 2012. And how about Point Given in 2001? Don't forget about Point Given. I know that he wasn't close at the end of the Kentucky Derby, but he went on to dominate the Preakness and the Belmont after that poor showing in Louisville, and it was a bit of a rough trip for Point Given that day. But he was much the best of that three-year-old crop. All he did after the Derby loss was go on and be named champion three-year-old and horse of the year. So there's no arguing that Bob Baffert is the GOAT among trainers when it comes to the Kentucky Derby. But should we now be saying that Bob Baffert is the greatest thoroughbred trainer who's ever saddled a horse? Some of you will automatically say, Baron, that is blasphemy. And you probably think, I've completely lost it for even suggesting that might be the case on national radio here this morning. How can you even bring that up when we've had Woody Stevens and Charlie Whittingham and Alan Jerkins and Ben Jones and Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons and Laz Barrera, Bobby Frankel, Dwayne Lucas, just to name a few. But I bet, and I would be willing to put money on this, there are plenty of you out there thinking that you might be lucky enough to be living at a time when you can witness and appreciate the greatest thoroughbred trainer in the history of the sport. I'm sure there are plenty of you that share that opinion. And in terms of all-time wins, if you look at it that way, Bob Baffert really isn't that close. 3,120 career victories as of this morning, which ranks him 31st all-time. And to put that into perspective for you, how about this? Baffert has 156 fewer wins than trainer Jamie Ness. He trails Carl Broberg by 829 wins, and he is 1,315 victories behind trainer Jeff Runco in West Virginia. And while each of those trainers has been highly successful, none of them would ever be confused for Bob Baffert. The list of trainers with more wins than Bob Baffert also includes legendary names like Steve Asmussen and Jack Van Berg and Dwayne Lucas, Todd Pletcher, Alan Jerkins, Grover Delp, and Bobby Frankel. So is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? If you look at total earnings, it gets a bit easier to make that case. Baffert is third all time with more than $300 million in earnings. 320 to be exact, 320 plus. That's roughly $84 million behind Todd Pletcher and $34 million behind Steve Asmussen, who are 1 and 2 on the list, respectively, ahead of Bob. Baffert has saddled winners of 17 Triple Crown races. If he wins the Preakness next Saturday, which, by the way, he is going to be favored to do, he will pass Wyndham Walden as the all-time leading trainer in the history of horse racing's middle jewel. So within the span of 2 weeks, he can become the all-time leading trainer in the history of the Kentucky Derby and in the history of the Preakness. He has saddled the winners of 17 Breeders' Cup races, second only to Dwayne Lucas, who has 20. And how many times do we talk about other greatest stakes races throughout the year and say no trainer has won more of these than Bob Baffert? And oh, by the way, he has won 2 Triple Crowns. I don't know if Bob Baffert is the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time. Whenever you get into comparing trainers or teams or individuals, athletes from various generations, it always opens up an incredible debate. And this will too. But I do know that Bob Baffert has to be considered for that title. He's in the conversation. And I wanted to throw it out there this morning to get your opinion on this, HRN Nation. I was giving it a lot of thought this week, and as I was prepping for the show, I said, man, he certainly has a dog in that fight. You can let me know at HRRN on Twitter. You can weigh in on the poll question there. You can do it on Facebook. Horse Racing Radio Network is our Facebook page. Or if you don't do social media, email your thoughts to me, mike@horseracingradio.net. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? All right, the Preakness Stakes next Saturday will be live right here on HRN. You will hear it on nationwide radio, exclusively on the Horse Racing Radio Network in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. That comes your way 5 o'clock Eastern next Saturday. Make sure you're with us. You can lock into our race day program throughout the week. We'll have all kinds of Preakness Week coverage for you, including the Black Eyed Susan and Pimlico special on Friday as part of that show. You can go to horseracingradio.net to check out a complete broadcast schedule, SiriusXM channel information, and to see a listing of affiliates on our website, too. It's there at horseracingradio.net. Going to be a busy couple of hours, as I mentioned. Coming up in just a few minutes after this first break, I'm going to welcome in the Jockey Club's Gary Falter, who will join me to talk about the success of their 2021 Virtual Owner Conference series. It's been really, really good. I had the privilege of moderating one of those back in April, and it was a really informative panel. At 8:30, it is time for today's first bet, to look at a horse that you can bet later today and hopefully make some money. 8:35, I'll welcome Francis Relihan, who is the bloodstock manager for Sumaya Farm and Sumaya U.S. Stables. She will tell you all about the unlikely sire of Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit. It's a fantastic story. It is one that needs to be told and shouted from the rooftops, and she'll do that at 8:35. 9 o'clock, trainer Robertino Diodoro discusses his Preakness hopeful Keep Me in Mind, who ran a sneaky good race, really good race in the Kentucky Derby. One of the few horses able to make up ground through the stretch, and Keep Me in Mind was far, far back early. 9:20, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. 9:35, I welcome NBC's Lafitte Pinkai, who will be with me to look back on the Kentucky Derby and look ahead to Saturday's Preakness. 10 o'clock, we go in the room with Sean Clancy. 10:25, Buff Bradley will be here to look back on his outstanding career, which will come to a close at the end of the Churchill Spring Meet. The man who trained Groupie Doll and Brass Hat and The Player and Divisadero. He'll be here at 10:25. Should be a fun visit. And at 10:40, the Big A, Anthony Stabile, will preview today's greatest stakes races at Belmont Park. Loaded card there. The Man of War, the Peter Pan, part of a huge day of racing in Elmont, New York. And I'll welcome the Big A to the program at 10:40. So a lot of things to get to. It's a very busy program. It all starts next with Gary Falter from Ownerview. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Silver Charm, Captain Budget, Touch Gold, Freehouse, Silver Charm. Head to head, they're in very close quarters, shoulder to shoulder, head to head, nose to nose. Freehouse, Silver Charm, Captain Budget. Oh, it's close. Could be Silver Charm in between. Freehouse, Captain Budget, and a Preakness we will remember.
As the field comes into the final furlong, it is Justify in front. Good Magic on the outside. Tenfold, Bravazo, Justify. He's unstoppable. He won the Preakness.
the first and the most recent Preakness victories for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. He has seven of those. Silver Charm is first in 1997. Justify the most recent in 2018. Yeah, been quite a ride for the Hall of Famer. We'll see if he can add to that total. And by the way, stand alone at the top of the list with a victory coming up next Saturday. Again, our coverage coming up 5 o'clock Eastern exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. It is going to be a special day at Old Hilltop in Baltimore, Maryland. Gary Falter is with me now. He, of course, with the Jockey Club and the man who heads up the Owner View Thoroughbred Owner Conferences, which this year are being held virtually because of issues with the pandemic, and it has been highly successful. And Gary is with me now to tell you all about it. Gary, appreciate the visit, my friend.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. I understand that you are on the road driving, but you have a chauffeur, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, Cindy's at the wheel, and I'm just her passenger right now. So glad to be with you today.
Yeah, and happy to talk to you about the Owner View conferences. I've had the privilege, you know, and I've told people this on the show many times, to be part of the conferences since your very first one, and it's always a delight to moderate the panels and get a chance to, you know, learn a few things, because, you know, certainly there is so much good information that comes out of those. Tell me about what's happening with the conference this year now that everything is being held virtually.
Sure. So this is the first year we've done this online, virtually, as you mentioned. In the past, we've always tried to do the conferences in person, but, you know, with the COVID pandemic, it just didn't make sense to plan an in-person conference this year because we just don't know where we'll be later in the year. So we've opted for a series of 10 panels that started in March, and we do these every month, the first Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. Eastern, and we've had three panels so far in the series of 10, and it's gone quite well. Again, this is a new ground for us. We've not done it before. It's opened up the conference to many, many more owners. The registration is free, so that makes it nice. And the fact that you can watch and even participate interactively with the Q&A from almost anywhere, as long as you have Zoom access and Internet access, has made it very convenient for a lot of owners. So we've got well over 1,000 registrations. The attendance has been quite good, very pleased with the live attendance. And we record every session so that if somebody can't watch it live, they can come back a day or two later and we'll have the recorded version up. And we leave that up. In fact, we have all three of the first sessions available for anyone who will register on our website, and they can have access to all three panels that we've already done, and then all 10 eventually.
What kind of feedback have you received thus far?
All real positive. I mean, people like the fact that they can do this on their schedule. There's no travel involved. There's no real cost involved other than a person's time. The panels we've had, I mean, the panel you did last month with the Finding Your Thoroughbred Athletes was just a fabulous panel. I mean, the interaction between our four panelists was great. They complimented one another. I think all of our guests, those who have commented back to me, said they really appreciate the various views, the different views. We just had Racing Syndicates and Partnerships this past Tuesday. And, you know, one thing you find out is these racing syndicates all have different models. The only thing that's common between them is the fact that it's shared ownership. And I think that's where the commonality ends right there, because they have different models. And so the feedback we're getting from those who are attending has been very positive and very encouraging. People like the fact that this is available, and you only really have to invest about an hour and 20 minutes of your time. We usually go about 50 to 60 minutes with the live panel, and then we go to Q&A afterwards for about another 20 minutes, so people who are online can then ask questions via Zoom, and that's going quite well.
I know, just judging from the panel that I was part of in April, and even from past panels, Gary, it seems like that Q&A at the end is something that people really appreciate, because not only are they able to gather information when they listen to the panelists talk, but then afterwards, they have the opportunity to have their questions answered in real time, which I think is a fantastic element of those panels.
Yeah, you know, we talked about when we first planned a series of panels, should we record them ahead of time and play them back? And we decided to keep it live for a couple of reasons. We definitely wanted to have the Q&A, and obviously, you know, need to have that to be live. But, you know, one thing you may have found on the panel that you moderated, and I'm seeing on all three of them, is just the interaction between the panelists and the moderator and just the spontaneous answers and responses you get. You can't get that on a recorded, edited version. And, you know, we always have a couple snafus that take place during these live panels. And I told someone the other day, you know, that's some of the challenges and risks of doing something live. If you have a hiccup or something gets out of order, you know, you got to quickly adjust and change things around so that you don't miss out on everything. So I kind of know what the guys at Saturday Night Live go through with the live broadcast and trying to make sure you don't miss anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts involved, and certainly it, you know, with doing it virtually, you're at the mercy of technology, which is something, I guess you could always say that, even when you're in person, there could be issues with wiring or microphones or things like
right.
that, but they typically go rather smooth, and the team that helps put these together for you is fantastic, and it's a, you know, if people are even thinking about maybe getting involved in the sport as an owner, these panels are so helpful because you cover so many different aspects of the sport. And I know I've even had established owners who have been in the game for a while come to me after some of these panels and tell me that they have learned things that they never imagined that they would be able to learn from a panel such as this and a conference such as this.
Yeah, I've had several feedback emails from attendees who are longtime owners who have told me, and I hear this every year, that I can't believe how much I learned from this panel just by sitting in and participating. So it's not just for newcomers. And when we started this in 2014, one of our challenges was, do we create a conference for those who are new or considering ownership, or do we do a conference for those who are already established owners? And the answer was yes, both. Let's make sure we do a conference that appeals to everyone, that has something for everyone. And I think, you know, we've been fortunate to have, I mean, just terrific panelists, people who have been in the industry for many, many years and have a lot of history and background and are very willing to share their experiences. This last panel we had just had some wonderful comments and advice and ideas for people to consider if they're looking into a racing syndicate or forming their own partnership. And you just can't get that just by, you know, showing up at the racetrack. And so having these panels and having so many expert panelists who are willing to share their time and experiences is just made this thing what it is today.
Talking with the Jockey Club's Gary Falter, who heads up OwnerView. You can go to OwnerView.com to learn more about the conferences in general and about signing up for the upcoming conferences as well. There are several other panels set to go this year. Gary, one of the cool things about doing this virtually, I guess, you kind of lose out on the face-to-face interaction, certainly, and you lose out on some of the additional things that have become commonplace with the conference, like going to the Breeders' Cup, for example. You're always instrumental in getting panelists tickets and seats to the Breeders' Cup or whatever event it might be surrounding at that time. You lose that aspect of it, but the cool thing is you're asking people to sit down with you for about an hour every couple of months or so, and that's not taxing on people's time. I think that's something that it has to be a big check mark in your favor, isn't it?
I think so, because with the way this format works, having 10 panels over 10 months is I might register and decide that 5 of the 10 panels are of interest to me, so I only have to invest the time in those 5 that are of interest to me. Others who may want to attend all 10, you can sit through the entire hour plus, or if you have to drop off for another meeting or some other obligation, you know, you can come back later and watch the recorded version and the parts that you missed. So I'm with you on the fact that on the in-person conference, there's so much socializing and networking and interaction that we with panelists and attendees and special guests that we're missing out on that. But some of the pluses that come with having this online, virtually, and recorded is working very well. You know, we're averaging about 250 live attendees for the first three sessions. Wow. And about double that on the recorded version. So, you know, we're getting 700-800 owners viewing these conference panels, and we just didn't have anywhere near those numbers during the live broadcast.
Might this be a new model moving forward, or would you like to get back to the traditional format of having everybody together in person?
That's a great question. There definitely will be discussion at the Jockey Club in Toba on should we continue this on in the future, and should we go back to the live conference, or should we even consider doing both in the same year? So everything's up for discussion. I mean, this has been very successful. It's caught our attention. I mean, it's surprising how well this is going, and the number of people that are interested in participating. And, you know, I think we're in a new world now where, you know, this pandemic has done a lot of things, not all good, to our social lives, but it's also brought in some new ideas on ways we can conduct business and other things that we hadn't thought of before. So, yeah, I think it's very likely that we'll continue with something like this in the future, and maybe it'll be a rotational thing. It's something we'll certainly talk about this year as we plan ahead.
Well, the next panel comes up Tuesday, June 1st. It is called Filling Your Racing Stable Through Claiming, and you'll have Gary Contessa as part of the panel, Kathy Ritvo, Kirk Wyckoff, a thoroughbred owner as well. Gabby Gaudette is set to moderate that one. Again, Tuesday, June 1st, and once a month you'll have the opportunity to be part of these panels through OwnerView and through the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. You can go to ownerview.com to learn more and to sign up. And Gary, listen, really appreciate the visit here this morning. This is a fantastic idea that you and the team at the Jockey Club came up with years ago. And, you know, all the best moving forward with it here this year.
Oh, thanks so much, Mike, and I really do appreciate your support and involvement.
Of course, Gary Falter here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, go to ownerview.com. The very first one that I was part of, it was at Keeneland, and I can remember that their keynote address was given by Hall of Fame golfer Gary Player, and I had a chance to visit with Gary for about 30 minutes, talk to him about his involvement with owning and breeding horses. It was one of the highlights of my broadcasting career, but these OwnerView conferences and panels that they put together are so, so good. So head over there now and check it out, and you know, sign up, be part of it. If you haven't done it yet, it's well worth it, whether you are in the game already or you are thinking about getting involved in it's a great way to learn more. All right, coming up next, I'm going to visit with Frances Relihan, who is the bloodstock manager for Sumaya Farm and Sumaya U.S. Stable. She's going to tell you the unlikely story of the sire behind Medina Spirit, the Kentucky Derby winner. It's fantastic. It's a story that needs to be told, and it's going to be told next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
In early October of 1920, amidst full pastel resplendence of early fall, some 30,000 racing fans gathered at Kenilworth Park in suburban Toronto, Canada, in eager anticipation of the much-ballyhooed match race between Sam Riddle's Titan of the Turf, Man o' War, and the 1919 Triple Crown winner, the first ever, by the way, Sir Barton. Man o' War was regarded as virtually invincible in many racing quarters and was an overwhelming favorite amongst those in attendance to defeat Colonel Ross's superb four-year-old. The distance was 1¼ miles, the purse $75,000 plus a $5,000 gold cup. There had been a modicum of controversy generated among racing fans when Earl Sandy, the regular pilot aboard Sir Barton, was replaced for this particular race by Jack Keogh. Commander Ross, the horse's owner, felt Sandy was not riding in top form at that time. The rider aboard the immortal Big Red was his customary reinsman, Clarence Cummer. As a matter of fact, Colonel Ross had first call on Cummer's services, but he deferred to Cummer's wishes in allowing him to ride Riddle's horse. Colonel Ross said, quote, "My action is taken without any prejudice to Sandy, and I am only exercising my right as owner of Sir Barton." The two horses answered the call to post and paraded before the stands looking absolutely fit on their way to the gate. Man o' War looked about nonchalantly as though this were an ordinary occurrence. Henry Morrissey was the starter, and he waited until both champions were perfectly ready. Then he sent them on their way as the webbing flew up, and to the huge roar of the vast throng, the race that was billed as, quote, "the race of the century" was indeed underway. Sir Barton was well away, and he took the lead for the first 16th, but that was all. Man o' War was quickly given his head by Cummer, and he shot by Sir Barton to establish a clear lead as he went the first quarter in a rapid 22-3. It was Man o' War by two open lengths and still somewhat in reserve by Cummer as he hit the half in 46-2, three quarters in 111-2. Keogh wrapped Sir Barton a couple of times with a stick, but could get no more out of him as Man o' War coasted into and on around the turn, coasting while galloping freely with those long, smooth strides for which he had been well noted. By the time they hit the top of the stretch, Man o' War had opened up to a three-length advantage after clocking a mile in 137-4. Cummer glanced back at his rival, who was struggling valiantly while fully extended but not closing a single inch of ground. Man o' War was just breezing along in synchronized motion and continued to increase his margin, cruising to the wire a winner in smashing fashion by an open seven lengths. The final time was 2:03 flat, and Cummer later said, quote, "It was about as easy a score as Man o' War had ever chalked up. It was the lope for the last quarter. Had he wanted to, he could easily have gone a couple of seconds faster. It was far faster than I expected, and I knew Sir Barton had no business with Man o' War after we had gone the first quarter," end of quote. But Sam Riddle was his customary modest self after the winning effort of his stalwart, and Commander Ross, the losing owner, was among the very first to offer his congratulations. It all happened on a resplendent fall day in a beautiful setting at Kenilworth Park in suburban Toronto, Canada, October of 1920, a truly great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Racing fans, Santa Anita is now open to the general public, so please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating as walk-up admission is not yet available. Join us on Saturday as Phillies and Mares will go a marathon mile and one-half on turf in the Grade 3 Santa Barbara Stakes, and on Sunday, California-bred Phillies and Mares will go 1 mile on turf in the $100,000 Franz Valentine. And make plans now to join us for the middle jewel in racing's Triple Crown, the Preakness Stakes, on Saturday, May 15th. Admission gates will open at 7 a.m. on Preakness Day, and infield admission gates will open at 9 a.m. And if you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet. First post time this Saturday is at 1 p.m., so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap the entire card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live.
Pit Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
And on the outside, Noble Bird is launching a bid, 2-3-1 on the outside. Cougar Ridge is in behind them as the field turns for home. Den's Legacy still in front. Protonico draws alongside, and Noble Bird is fighting on as well. Down to the final furlong. Protonico inside of Noble Bird. These two lock horns with a six-piece to go. Protonico on the outside, Noble Bird. Noble Bird's got the lead close to home. Noble Bird, Protonico fights on. Photo! Very tight on the wire. Noble Bird looked to have had it won. Protonico came back and made it tight, too tight to tell. Neck and neck was third.
Well, it was indeed Protonico with the victory in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba Stakes at Churchill Downs in 2015. Travis Stone with the call for you here this morning. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Protonico, so good in his racing career. He won 7 of 16 races. He earned nearly $1 million, but as a stallion, he didn't come with the same reputation, and he stands for $5,000 over at Castleton Lions in Lexington. I can remember when they first got him over there, working with Stuart Fitzgibbon, who was part of the team at that point. And now I'm going to get a chance to visit with Francis Relihan, who is the bloodstock manager for Sumaya Farm and Sumaya U.S. Stables. Protonico, the sire of Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit. That visit with Francis coming up momentarily. But before we get to that, it is time for our weekly segment. Today's First Bet, presented by our friends at First Bet, a chance to get you ready to pick a winner at the races later today.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in race 7 at Gulfstream Park with a post of 3:37 Eastern. It's a maiden special weight at 6 furlongs. Number 10, Maddie's Dream, is the pick. With a 24% win projection from First Bet, he rates 11 points higher than the next closest competitor. Ranks number 1 in First Bet's 2 most important handicapping factors for the race, and he overcame trouble at the start of his debut and still ran second. He could provide overlay odds with Gamine's half-brother Splashtown debuting in this race. Plus, race 7 is the first leg of the mandatory payout Rainbow Six sequence. Number 10, Maddie's Dream, is today's First Bet. I'm back in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
You know, so often in this sport, and by the way, you just heard from Gary Falter from OwnerView in the first half of the show, the first segment of the show a short time ago. So often we talk about being an owner, and we talk about being a multimillionaire to get involved in this sport, and it's the sport of kings, and it has that mystique. And in some respects it's true, but in other respects you don't have to be a multimillionaire to compete and to win at the highest levels of the game. And the story surrounding Medina Spirit and last week's win in the Kentucky Derby is so good. Here's a horse that when he sold as a yearling, he sold for, how about this, $1,000. $1,000 as a yearling. He was a little more highly regarded at the two-year-old sales when he sold for $35,000. But Medina Spirit is the epitome of the rags-to-riches type story. And it gives every small owner, every small breeder in the sport hope that, hey, this can happen. It can happen to me, too. And it's happened, for a stallion by the name of Protonico, who stands at Castleton Lions. And I now have the chance to welcome in Francis Relihan, who is the bloodstock manager for Sumaya Farm and Sumaya U.S. Stables, the owners of Protonico. She is with me now. Francis, first of all, congratulations and thanks for the visit.
Mike, thanks a million. It's wonderful. Like it's been, it's been a dream come true, especially for Mr. Abu-Ghazali. And like you said, a rags to riches story, especially with Medina Spirit, with, you know, the origins of the horse. And I think it's great for racing, like you said, because it just really gives everybody hope that a good horse and a super horse can come from anywhere. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, the auction price, that horse does not know, you know, what he costs. So it's pretty cool.
It's fantastic. And I can remember when Protonico, who, by the way, didn't start his stallion career at Castleton Lions. I can remember when he moved to Castleton Lions a couple of years ago, and Stuart Fitzgibbon was with the team at Castleton Lions at the time, and we started doing some advertising for Protonico here on the network. And, you know, I went back and looked at his race record and his pedigree, and he had every right to produce a really good horse.
Absolutely. The main thing, though, that the stallion business, as we know, it's become so competitive and it's so tough, especially in Kentucky. Protonico, you know, he had great speed. You know, he set a track record in the Ben Ally at Keeneland. You know, he was a multiple graded stakes winner, but he was just a little unlucky just not to get that grade one win. So when you're retiring a horse with the competition in Kentucky, you know, that makes it tough for breeders because they have such a variety of horses to choose from. And, you know, it just makes it a little tough. But, you know, he was such a gritty, hard-running horse. And, you know, he did everything, you know, to get his head in front. Like when he got down to the wire in the Ali Sheba at Churchill on Derby Day, and he beat Noble Bird, I think it was, just like in a head bob. And, you know, he's just such a tough horse, which, you know, we're seeing that now, some of that coming through, obviously, with Medina Spirit. So, you know, I'm just so glad to see this happen based on limited opportunity, because he has been a horse that, you know, we've had, you know, it's been tough to get breeders behind him just because of the variety of stallions they have available to them in Kentucky.
Yeah, let's not kid ourselves. Medina Spirit wasn't expected to win the Kentucky Derby. He had been knocking on the door against very good competition this year, but had yet to break through. He puts in the performance of his life last Saturday at Churchill Downs. What was it like for you, Francis, watching him come through the stretch?
It was wonderful. I was lucky enough to be there, and Mr. Zidane had invited me along, and I was in the box. I was behind Mr. Zidane, and I saw him break well, you know, and I said, let's, you know, everybody talked through the strategy beforehand, and, you know, we were excited, and we were like, you know, the most important thing, you know, he got a good draw, and, you know, if he can get out of there quick, because he's a very good gate horse, and get out of trouble, because as we know, with so many horses in the Derby, you know, if you don't break well, and you get stuck in traffic, and, you know, it's almost all over going into the first turn. So, you know, when he broke so well and he got to the lead, and, you know, we're like, wow, this is great. And, you know, at every call in the race, we were like, okay, you know, he's doing well. And, you know, we're looking at the fractions, getting a little worried, and we were wondering about the closers. And, you know, then turning for home, we were like, that was the first time we were like, oh, my gosh, you know, this could really happen. And it was just amazing. It was amazing. And just to see his toughness and his grittiness coming down the lane, and you know, just the heart, and I think that's the most immeasurable thing with a racehorse. As we know, you know, you can judge them on confirmation and pedigree all day long, but when they get in the heat of battle, and you know, I think I've said, I've kind of been quoted on saying this horse has the heart of a lion. You know, he's just a tough racehorse that doesn't want to let a horse past him.
Well, Bob Baffert said the same thing, so you were in good company with those sentiments too, Francis, no doubt about it. Protonico, at least at this point, and he's very, very young as a stallion, but he is not Tappet. He's not Curlin. He's not Into Mischief yet, but he now has a Derby winner from his first crop. Why have you always believed in Britannico as a stallion?
Well, I have to hand all the credit there to Mr. Abagazali, you know, because it's his family. He bred three generations of the family. And, you know, in my position, you know, I always had to caution him, you know, regarding, you know, the market and how hard it is, you know, if we can't get the numbers of runners out there. And, you know, even with Mr. Abagazali's support of the stallion, you know, we still felt, gosh, you know, this is an uphill battle, you know, where when you're competing against horses that have, you know, bred books of 150 plus mares and, you know, are getting the opportunity to breed better quality mares. So we had to settle for a lot less numbers. So we ended up giving him a couple of very nice Sumaya mares and, hoped that the quality over quantity, approach would help. So I'm so thrilled because for Mr. Abagazali, number one, because, you know, he really believed in the horse. And, you know, I was more of, I won't say more of a realist, but, you know, in respect, you know, I knew how hard it was going to be. So for this to happen, you know, with 10 runners, it's just incredible, incredible.
Yeah, it's storybook, isn't it?
It is, for sure. Absolutely, absolutely. So
yeah, it's fantastic. Tell me more about Usama Abagazali.
So he's a wonderful gentleman. I've been working with him now about five years, and he's been with horses all his life. He grew up in the Middle East, and his business ventures took him to South America, so the fruit business. And he established a farm down there breeding thoroughbreds probably close to 40 years ago. His first love was polo, and he was quite an accomplished polo player in his younger days. So great love of the horse, and it goes all the way back to, you know, his family in the desert and Arabian horses. And he's really a neat guy, you know, and he's got just, you know, it's not just racing or, you know, getting to the winner's circle with him. It's the enjoyment of raising these foals and seeing what they turn into and the whole process. And, you know, he's got a great love of the horse, which I think is great to see as well.
Why did you feel like Castleton Lions would be a great fit for this horse when you moved him?
Well, we were looking around for a couple of options, and I know he'd landed, he'd landed in one or two other spots prior. And Castleton is a wonderful farm. The facilities are great. The land is wonderful. And also we were looking for a place where we could have a group of mares for him, because Mr. Abagazali, approximately about 5 years ago, bought a farm out in Paris. It was the old Crystal Springs farm. Lovely piece of land there, across the road from Denali. Very nice, just a great piece of land in Bourbon County. But we were limited with the amount of space we had. So we were looking for a farm that had the availability to take on a group of mares and the facilities to stand the stallion. So, and also Castleton is quite close to Sumaya. So it was a great fit. And also, I know Pat Hayes quite well. Pat, their general manager, he and I go back to our childhood in Ireland. So I had a good relationship with Pat. So we thought that that might be a good spot for Britannico.
It's been a wonderful fit for him. And again, it's hard to believe with just 10 runners in that full crop that he would produce a Kentucky Derby winner. But here he is, and he has a horse that could potentially, if he can pass the middle jewel, that test that he'll face next Saturday, potentially be running for a Triple Crown, which is, you know, that's something they need to make a movie about. Right, Francis, if that happens?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said to Mr. Abagazali, we'll go one step at a time. But by all accounts, the horse has come out of the race really well. And the weather in Kentucky is great at the moment, and he's enjoying it. And, they said, jumping out of his skin a couple of days ago. So he's well in himself. So we're on to the second leg. So we'll go one step at a time.
When a sire like Britannico, who is just getting started with his career, sires a Kentucky Derby winner in his first crop, is it instantaneous, like the next day or maybe even later that night, that people start calling Castleton Lions asking about breeding their mares to the horse? Does it work like that?
It actually does. It does. And I worked at Vinery for several years, and I saw a similar pattern with the stallions over there. But yes, the phone started ringing, and the phone was hopping all week. So he's gotten quite an influx of mares in this past week, and it's even this late in the season, you know, which is great. It's nice to see him. He's a very fertile horse. He's a great horse to handle and deal with, and we're very happy to see him get more opportunity from this.
Well, Francis, it's a wonderful story for you, for the team, for everybody that's involved with Medina Spirit on so many levels. It means so much to so many people. And again, I think it's a fantastic example for people that are thinking about getting into the sport, whether it be as an owner, a breeder, whatever it might be, that you can have success. It takes some luck, but you can do it at a very high level with a modest stallion, with a modest group of broodmares, whatever it might be. You can do it in this sport and make it happen. And I'm so happy for you and for the team. Well done. Congratulations, and all the best next week in Baltimore.
Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate it. And, you know, we're thrilled for racing, and it's just always cool to have this kind of story in the headlines.
Yeah, it certainly is. Appreciate the visit, Francis. Francis Relihan, the bloodstock manager for Sumaya Farm and Sumaya U.S. Stables, the owners of Stallion Britannico at Castleton Lions. What a great story. I mean, that's what this game is truly all about. And we talk about it a lot, right? Yes, it's the sport of kings. Yes, it has the mystique and the stigma that you have to be a millionaire to play in this game. You don't have to be. You don't have to be. You can get lucky. That's the great thing about it, you know, and you can buy into a horse like a Medina Spirit for $1,000 as a yearling, for $35,000 as a 2-year-old, and you can win the Kentucky Derby. That's the message we need to get out as a sport. You want to attract more owners? You want to put people at ease and drop those walls that we tend to put up as a sport? Tell this story. Let people know about this story. And get this one out there as much as we possibly can to the mainstream public. And I guarantee you, it'll attract some people to our game. There's no doubt about it. All right, coming up next, I'll get you set for the second hour, hour 2 of 3, which kicks off at 9 Eastern. I'll do that when we come back. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Cyrus Sires Taprit to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again.
so I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
It's always been a goal of mine, but we try not to. I mean, these horses, I keep using the phrase, keep this horse happy and healthy. I really think he's got the ability to be a Kentucky Derby contender, but... You just take one day at a time, and again, our job is to keep this horse healthy and happy from now till May 1st.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com here in the month of May. That was trainer Robertino Diodoro talking about his Derby starter, Keep Me In Mind. Now, that was from an interview that we did back in February talking about that horse, and he said just keep him happy and healthy until May 1st. He did that, and Keep Me In Mind found his way into the starting gate. He ran a monster race. He was 19th early on. Go back and watch the race. He was 19th early. He did not get off to a good beginning. Found himself at the back of the pack and came flying at the end. He finished 7th, a neck out of 6th, behind Midnight Bourbon. But Midnight Bourbon and Keep Me In Mind, even Obesos, I guess you could say, yeah, because Obesos came from far back. Those were the three horses that were running at the end. Keep Me In Mind may have been running better than either of those other two. He was flying, and I'm going to talk with Robertino Diodoro coming up in just a few minutes. He'll join me 9 o'clock Eastern to kick off the second hour of the program. 9:20, I'll take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. That segment presented each week by Lane's End and Keeneland. Lafitte Pinkai from NBC Sports will be with me at 9:35 Eastern, and then we'll segue into the third hour of the show. 10 o'clock Eastern, it's In the Room with Sean Clancy, a one-on-one visit with a jockey. It's a jockey-to-jockey conversation, if you will. And then our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, who this week is trainer Buff Bradley, who announced his retirement. He'll retire at the end of the Churchill meet. I'll talk to him and look back on his career at 10:25. And at 10:40, the Big A, Anthony Stabile, will join me from New York to preview the huge card later today at Belmont Park. Several great stakes, including the Grade 1 Man of War, the Peter Pan, part of a great Saturday of racing in Elmont, New York. You know, quite often, I'll spend a few minutes on this program talking about the local businesses that have supported HRN and the Equine Forum Show. And there are several here throughout the Bluegrass who have done that, including my friend Bob Cleveland over at Woodford Feed here in Versailles. And I tell you all the time that if you need any farm tools, if you need any kind of feed or corn or whatever it might be, head over and see them, and they're great people, and they will take wonderful care of you at Woodford Feed. Lexus of Lexington has been a part of this program for so long, and you know how I feel about them. Tony's in downtown Lexington. Tony Ricci, the owner of Tony's, just one of the greatest people you're ever going to meet, and his team it just does a remarkable job down there. So if you're looking for a wonderful meal, Tony's is the place to go. And this week, I had a chance to visit with some folks here in Versailles who I had never met before, Dustin and Jesse Creech. It's a husband-wife team that own Creech Auto Repair. They're on Fielding Drive here in Versailles, and they really helped me out. I do a lot of outdoor – many of you know who listen to this program know I do a lot of work in the outdoors, and I have a side-by-side that needed new tires. Well, I was having a hard time finding a place to put tires on in a timely fashion. I called over to Creech Auto Repair, and they did it for me the very next day. and they got it done that morning. I pulled up. They said, hey, bring it in. I dropped it off, and I actually waited. Well, they did the tires. It didn't take long. They put new tires on there for me, really helped me out. So if you're in Versailles, if you need any type of auto repair, whatever it might be, give Dustin and Jesty Creech a call at Creech Auto Repair. I highly recommend it. Great people and hardworking, and great to see them doing well with that business that they opened a few years ago. All right, hour number two coming up next. It kicks off right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. In the same week he saddled his first starter in the Kentucky Derby, trainer Wesley Ward nabbed his 2,000th training win in North America when Gold for Kitten clawed her way to victory at Churchill Downs in Race 6 on Thursday, May 6th. Before starting his training career 30 years ago, Ward won the Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice Jockey in 1984 with 335 victories, along with riding titles at Aqueduct, Belmont, and the Meadowland. He's also an accomplished owner and breeder. In 2014, he captured the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint with his very own Judy the Beauty and has three other Breeders' Cup wins, along with an astonishing 11 wins at Royal Ascot. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back. Busy morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This Equine Forum show presented in the month of May by FarmPaint.com. Happy to have you back with me. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, my interview with Gary Falter from OwnerView or Francis Relihan talking about their stallion Protonico out at Castleton Lions, all you have to do is head back to the website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. They're there for you, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Poll question today, and I asked you this at the top of the show. You can weigh in on our Twitter feed, at HRRN, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? I know some of you think I'm crazy. I know some of you think that that's blasphemy for me to even make that statement here this morning, but it's a question. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? You have three choices on our Twitter feed. Absolutely. The second one is not even close. Basically, are you crazy, Baron? And the third one is he's in the conversation. And so far, that's the winner. 54% of you saying, yeah, he's in the conversation as the greatest trainer of all time. 31% say absolutely. And only 15% say not even close. Yeah, you can make that argument. He's definitely in the conversation for sure. 54% saying that's the case. Keep those coming. I'll update the poll question throughout the day. If you don't have social media, you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Well, Robertino Diodoro is a few wins behind Bob Baffert at this point, but he may catch him eventually because he's one heck of a horse trainer, and he had a chance to experience the Kentucky Derby for the first time last Saturday with Keep Me In Mind, who, as I told you earlier, ran a really good race. Robertino is with me now here on HRRN. Robertino, good morning, my friend. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. Tell me about the Kentucky Derby. What was the experience like?
Oh, it was, something I'll never forget, and already itching to get back, hopefully one day soon. No, it was a lot of fun.
Was it everything you dreamed it might be?
Definitely, and more. It was quite the rush. Leading up to it, and then, of course, the walk over. It was nice to see fans back, and definitely the buzz in the tunnel while the horses were walking out on post-parade.
I have talked to so many trainers and so many owners over the years about that walkover, and everybody kind of says the same thing. They say it's one of the most incredible walks in all the sports and all those types of things. But what's it really like, Robertino, for somebody like myself that's never done it? How do you describe it?
Oof, yeah, that's tough. It's... Like I said, it's definitely a buzz, and I think my hair on my arms were standing up, to be honest. It was a rush. I mean, it was definitely a wow.
Let's talk about the horse then. Keep me in mind. I've said all morning long that he ran a monster race coming from 19th after having trouble at the start, dead last early. He was, I think he was finishing probably the best of anybody at the end. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, we never want to be happy with seventh, but I think the one big thing is we got him to relax again, got him back to his the running style that he likes. You know, unfortunately, we had to, you know, get fanned out or go out, you know, so wide and lost some lengths on the turn. But, you know, the one thing, he was one of the few horses, like you said, running late and galloped out great and has bounced back out of the race really well.
How long did it take you to make the decision to go on to the Middle Jewel next week?
A few days after. We just wanted to make sure we gave him an extra day off after the race and got him back to the track on Wednesday, and he's trained really well. And you know, when you run a horse back this quick, you know, one of the big things, you know, make sure their appetite's still good and they're eating up and feeling themselves. And he definitely kept his appetite out. You know, it took a couple of days to get back to him, you know, himself playing and stuff, but he's definitely that now.
Well, you mentioned he got back to his preferred running style. He's a horse that when he relaxes early, he can really finish. That's been his M.O. since you started putting him in training and getting him to the races as a two-year-old. When he goes to Baltimore now, they say that that course is a bit tighter, maybe more speed-favoring. Any concerns about his running style on that track?
Well, a little bit, but at the same time, I don't think we can change it. We tried to change it in the bluegrass, and we've seen what happened there. So I definitely think we just got to stick to our game plan. And, you know, the old saying, just worry about our horse, and hopefully things work out. But, you know, it definitely is a concern. But, again, we're not going to change the running style because of that, because, unfortunately, we did it once, and it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. So much has been made, too, about the fact that Rock Your World didn't get off to a good start. He was pretty much left at the start. So he was the horse expected to put a lot of pressure on the front runners, but nobody expected Medina Spirit to be in front. I think that's pretty safe to say. He takes the field wire to wire in a very gutsy effort. Do you think if there was more pace up front that Keep Me In Mind may have even been a little closer at the finish?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that did hurt us a little bit. And, you know, a combination of you know, Rock Your World, like you said, not breaking the way he was supposed to, and then us getting fanned out, you know, literally in the middle of the racetrack, turning for home. I think a combination of that definitely, you know, cost us a few lengths for sure.
You know, you and I visited Robertino, I guess it was back in February, and we talked about the plan moving forward. It was when Oaklawn was having their postponements and delays, and you were trying to map out a schedule for this horse, and you did it masterfully to get him there. One of the things you told me, and I actually played the soundbite at the end of the first hour of the program this morning, you said the goal was to keep him happy and healthy until the first Saturday in May. You obviously did that. How were you able to do it through what was a very unusual spring season?
Yeah, it wasn't easy, to be honest. You know, horses peak at certain times, and I think it did, you know, hurt us a little bit. I said it wasn't easy, and but, you know, he's a pretty classy horse and a good-minded horse. I think that helped a lot or made our job a little bit easier. And I really think coming out of this race, out of the Derby last Saturday, I think he probably needed even that race, to be honest. It just, the whole Oaklawn thing was unfortunate and, you know, kind of threw him off his tracks kind of thing. But I think he'll be ready for next Saturday. And, you know, with his running style, you know, these other horses, you know, you mentioned, you know, Medina Spirit running his guts out, and he definitely did. Where, you know, with our horse, with his running style, I mean, really, he only runs the last 3/8 of a mile, and I think that definitely helps him bounce bounce out of a race quicker, and especially when you're coming back within 2 weeks of running again.
Yeah, it's a great point. Maybe a fresher horse than a horse like Medina Spirit, who really had to battle and fight every inch of the way, especially through the stretch. I mean, he was as courageous as they come and able to hold off all challengers, but maybe a bit of an advantage for you and for Keep Me In Mind that he's a slightly fresher horse, if you will, going into the Preakness, even though he ran in the Kentucky Derby.
No, definitely. I kind of, as soon as the Preakness idea come up, that was the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, this horse is running style. It's, if there's such a good running style to be running back in 2 weeks, it's definitely his. And even David Cohen mentioned after the race, he said, well, he only ran the last 3/8 again. You know, it's just, so it does definitely make it easier on a horse like him, I think, bouncing back this quick than, again, a horse that's, you know, setting the pace and running near the front end or on the front end and running their guts out.
Yeah, not only was it your first Kentucky Derby, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the first Derby mount for David Cohen, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, it was. Yep.
So you got to experience that together.
Yeah, no, that was pretty neat for both of us, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty special. Talking with trainer Robertino Diodoro, his Keep Me In Mind, pointing for the Preakness Stakes next Saturday. Of course, our exclusive national radio coverage coming your way in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network, 5 o'clock Eastern Time next Saturday afternoon. Robertino, you are certainly no stranger to winning races. 2,669 career wins going into today. That list will continue to grow. What's the absolute key to turning the tables on Medina Spirit and everybody else next Saturday?
Well, I think one, the track, which we don't have control of. I think if we can save some ground, on the final turn, I know it definitely wasn't Cohen's fault, and, we've talked about it a couple of times, so I think definitely we need to save some ground when we turn for home, and hopefully maybe a little bit of rain in the forecast might help the track maybe not be quite as speed biased as usual.
You know, you talked about your experience of making the walk over and being at the Derby for the first time, and you said it was everything you expected and more. You come from a racing family. Your grandfather, Jim Dorman, worked as a valet and a trainer. Your parents, Tino and Linda, instrumental in your success. What's your family think of this whole run through the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown?
Oh, no, they're pretty excited. Unfortunately, my mom and dad still live in Canada, and with COVID right now, Canada, or Alberta anyways, is back on lockdown, so it was definitely unfortunate that they couldn't make it to the Derby and, again, out to the Preakness, but they're watching every interview and every race as usual, so now they're pretty excited.
It's a long way from Northlands Park to Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May, isn't it?
definitely. I've had a lot of support and a lot of calls and text messages from Canada, that's for sure, over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can remember when you joined me on our Trainer Talk program and we walked back through some of your family history, and you were telling me about, of course, your love of hockey. You were an extremely talented hockey player, and at one point you were thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you might be able to do both hockey and horse racing together?
Yeah, that was definitely, one of those young and dumb things. You definitely can't do both, but, you always dream, right?
Yeah, well, I think you made the right choice. Things are moving in the right direction, and you continue to win races, year in and year out. And this is a very special horse. And Robertino, I wish you all the best coming up next Saturday in the Preakness.
No, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
All right. Radio Net. I accomplished hockey player. And he did. At one point, he thought about doing both hockey and horse racing. At one point, he had to choose, and he said, "Okay, I'm gonna choose horse racing." And it's worked out very, very well for him. As I told you, more than 2,600 winners in this career. And when you think of trainers that have won 2,600 races, nearly 2,700, you don't often think of people like Robertino Diodoro, because he has done it and done it in places like Northlands Park, for example. He did it at Canterbury, where he was a leading trainer at Canterbury, kind of out of the national spotlight, if you will. But guys like that, and people like Buff Bradley, by the way, who's going to be with me coming up at 10:25 to look back on his career, which will be coming to a close shortly. Trainers like that that aren't often in the spotlight, like a Baffert, a Pletcher, an Asmussen, they get it done. And they get it done day in and day out, and they dedicate their lives. Doesn't mean they don't work as hard as those other trainers. You just don't hear about them. And when you look at Robertino Diodoro, you know, this would be wonderful to add a classic win to his resume. But he's won graded stakes. He's won several graded stakes. Broadway Empire, a horse he trained, won the Grade 3 Canadian Derby and the Oklahoma Derby back in 2013. He had Edison, who won the Canadian Derby. Again, north of the border, so you probably don't pay attention to a guy like Robertino Diodoro. Inside Straight won the Grade 2 Oaklawn Handicap. That was back in 2017. Won the Canadian Derby again in 2018 with Sky Promise, who also took the British Columbia Derby. Again, horses and trainers that we don't often think about as being in the upper echelon of trainers in our game, but our sport is filled with them. And Robertino's a great story, and he's a wonderful person too. Really enjoy having him on every time I get a chance to visit with him, and wish him all the best in the Preakness Stakes next Saturday. In terms of the poll question today, go ahead and weigh in. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? 54% of you saying, yeah, he's in the conversation. 31% say absolutely, and only 15% saying not even close. That actually surprises me a little bit. I thought there'd be a little more kickback. I thought some of you might think I was, and maybe you do, think I'm absolutely insane for bringing that up and even presenting the question, but I think it's a legitimate question. But only 15% of you, now 16%, saying it's not even close. He's not even remotely close to being the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time. Most of you thinking, okay, yeah, I could see that. He could be. How about if he wins an eighth Preakness Stakes and stands alone in the middle jewel next Saturday? Then what does your opinion change? That 16% of you that say no, I wonder what that percentage looks like if I ask the same question next Saturday if he wins that race. Going to be fantastic. Can't wait for the middle jewel coming up next Saturday. Again, our coverage 5 Eastern here on the network. Head over to horseracingradio.net to check out a complete listing of affiliates all over the country, SiriusXM channel information, and of course you can always listen to all of our programming live and podcast on our site at horseracingradio.net. When I come back, I'll take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. I'll tell you about another Hall of Fame trainer, by the way. And you'll hear from Lapete Pinkai III from NBC Sports. That's all ahead on the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include The Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This proven son of Giants Causeway has sired 6 millionaires, including Claiborne Farm stallion Lee. Recent top runners include graded stakes winner Plum Ali.
But it's going to be Plum Ali, and she's now 3-for-3.
Sharp Samurai, international star Shivaji, and Birdie Queen, plus these standout performers. In the ring, his yearlings sold up to $260,000. First Samurai, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The spring meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. New for this year's meet will be the Stephen Foster Preview Day on May 29th with 7 stakes races as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with 7 total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning Your In Fleur-de-Lis for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Here comes Purge on the outside. Pye's Prospect is sent through on the rail. Intimidator in between those two, and Purge has taken the lead. And he's taken it impressively. Purge is opening up, passing the eighth pole. Swing for the Fences is now second on the outside. Master David is coming hard, but coming late. And they're coming down to the finish. And here is Purge with a breakthrough performance. He wins by 6 impressive lengths. Swing for the Fences was second. Master David came from well out of it to be third.
Well, how about that trip down memory lane? The 2004 running of the Peter Pan, Purge giving now Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher his first win in the Peter Pan Stakes. His first of three, he is tied with fellow Hall of Famer Alan Jerkins atop the list with 3 victories in the Peter Pan. If he can win today, he'll, of course, stand alone in that category. And it kind of made me think, as I was getting ready for the program, I was thinking about, you know, the poll question, is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? There are going to be some people who would say, no, it's Todd Pletcher. And again, you talk about, is it blasphemy that I would suggest that Bob Baffert would be the greatest of all time? You know, look, you look at what Todd Pletcher has done. Todd Pletcher, number one all time in career earnings. Now, you have to keep that in perspective, because trainers that were training 10, 15, 20, let's say 20 or 30 years ago, 40 years ago, didn't have the same opportunity to amass the type of earnings that we do today, because the money wasn't as great in all these greatest stakes races. Doesn't make those trainers any less amazing, any less brilliant. They just didn't have those opportunities. The money wasn't as good. So from an earnings perspective, Todd Pletcher is at the top of the list. He's also pretty good when it comes to wins, too. The guy can flat out train, and earlier this week it was announced that Todd Pletcher, first time on the ballot for the Hall of Fame, would indeed be inducted later this summer in Saratoga Springs, New York, which is fantastic news. Todd Pletcher, one of the true good guys in the sport, 53 years old, native of Dallas, went out on his own after working as an assistant trainer to Hall of Fame trainer Dwayne Lucas from 1989 to 1995. That Lucas training tree, just ridiculous. He won his first race in January of 1996 with Majestic Number at Gulfstream Park. Todd graduated from the University of Arizona, the racetrack industry program, and he owns records not just for career earnings and Eclipse Awards. He has 7 of those. He ranks 7th all-time in wins, 5,118. He has won the Kentucky Derby with Super Saver and Always Dreaming, and the Belmont Stakes with Rags to Riches, Palace Malice, and Taprit. And he's won 11 Breeders' Cup races, including the 2019 Classic with Vino Rosa. And how about this? He has led all North American trainers in earnings 10 times and trained 11 Eclipse Award winners to go with those. Just fantastic stuff. Todd Pletcher, very deserving. He joined me on the show a few weeks ago to talk about his Derby horses. And I told him there would have to be an investigation if for some reason he didn't get in on the first ballot. I certainly voted for him. And he said, I thought it was interesting. He said he was very humble. He said that this was never a goal of his. That question comes up a lot for him. And he said this was never necessarily the goal when he started out training. He just wanted to show up, do his job well, get good horses out there on the racetrack, and let the rest of it take care of itself. It has. It has, and it's now culminated in a Hall of Fame career for trainer Todd Pletcher, well-deserved. Also, congratulations to American Pharoah, the Triple Crown winner who was inducted into the – that was a no-brainer, too. And Jack Fisher, the 57-year-old native of Unionville, Pennsylvania, who won his first race as a trainer in 1988 in Middleburg, Virginia, with Carl Lewis. And Jack Fisher, consistently dominant at the top of the list for National Steeplechase Association standings. He is fantastic, and Jack Fisher, well-deserving as well. Congratulations to all three of those individuals who will be inducted, along with the 2020 inductees who couldn't be part of the ceremony last year because it was canceled because of the pandemic. They'll all be honored together this summer in Saratoga. It should be a fantastic ceremony, and each of those individuals I just mentioned and those horses playing a role in the history of our sport, which leads me into this week's edition of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. Later today, the New York Racing Association will present the Peter Pan Stakes, a Grade 3 test for 3-year-olds at a mile and an eighth at Belmont Park. The racing world will be watching to see if a potential Belmont Stakes contender might emerge from the field. That has been the case many times in the past. But for our purposes, we take a look back at Peter Pan himself, the champion thoroughbred of the early 20th century for whom the race is named. Peter Pan was a homebred foal in 1904 for owner, breeder, and Wall Street investor James R. Keene. His trainer was Hall of Famer James Rowe, who would count Peter Pan among the record 34 champions he conditioned. Turf historian W.S. Vosburgh described Peter Pan as a bay with a narrow blaze. His head was broad between the eyes, deep in the jowl, and square at the muzzle. He had a stout neck, a beautifully laid shoulder, and a deep girth and flanks. His barrel was very full, the ribs arching, the quarters massive, and the tail set low, all according to Vosburgh. On another occasion, Vosburgh described Peter Pan as a big, burly bay with every evidence of constitution and a degree of courage which helped him carry his speed when the pace was at its fiercest. As for breeding, Peter Pan was the son of Belmont Stakes winner and two-time Horse of the Year Commando. His mother, a mare named Cinderella, had won in stakes company in England at a mile and a half. His third dam was a full sister to the Epsom Derby winner of 1872. As a 2-year-old in 1906, Peter Pan scored his first stakes victory on June 28, taking the Surf Stakes at 5.5 furlongs as the co-second choice at the Sheepshead Bay Racetrack in Brooklyn. A few weeks later, on August 6, he won the Flash Stakes at the same distance at Saratoga, leading all the way under top weight of 125 pounds as the 2-to-1 favorite. But it was his performance on August 19, 1906, in the 6-furlong hopeful stakes at Saratoga that caused horsemen to begin taking notice of Peter Pan. Carrying 130 pounds and getting blinkers for the first time, Peter Pan won so easily that legendary horseman John Madden remarked, quote, "He could have won carrying 140 pounds," end quote. Madden described Peter Pan as powerful, good-looking, with an honest and business-like way of going. As a 3-year-old in 1907, Peter Pan would win the Belmont Stakes at a mile and 3/8 by 3 lengths before a crowd of 40,000. He returned 12 days later to win the 10-furlong Standard Stakes in stakes record time at the Gravesend Racetrack in Brooklyn. And then, on just 4 days' rest, he won the Brooklyn Derby at a mile and a half, also at Gravesend, leading all the way and winning by 3 lengths before 20,000 spectators. On June 22, 1907, Peter Pan once again led from start to finish and won the 10-furlong title stakes at Sheepshead Bay by 4 lengths. On July 4th, a crowd of 35,000 at the same racetrack watched as he went gate to wire in winning the advanced stakes at a mile and 3/8 as the 3-to-5 favorite. But the crowning moment of Peter Pan's career came on July 13, 1907, in the Brighton Handicap at a mile and a quarter at the Brighton Beach Racecourse in Brooklyn. A crowd of 35,000, the largest in the track's history, jammed the stands with expectations of seeing Peter Pan, the 8-5 favorite, register yet another front-running victory. But after a troubled start, Peter Pan was nowhere near the lead. Instead, he was next to last in a field of 14 with a half mile left to run. On the final turn, Peter Pan began picking off horses. One turf rider said he looked like a swift yacht going through a pack of fishing boats. And at the finish, it was Peter Pan prevailing by a neck. The Brighton Beach grandstand erupted in cheers, which, according to one newspaper, did not quit until the horse had left the winner's circle and returned to the barn. All told, Peter Pan had won 6 consecutive races at distances ranging from a mile and a quarter to a mile and a half in the span of 6 weeks. The string of successes was enough to secure his place as champion 3-year-old male of 1907. Peter Pan injured a tendon while training for the Brighton Derby, and he was retired in August of his 3-year-old season. He retired with a record of 10 wins and 17 starts, including an unbeaten 6-for-6 at classic distances. Following a successful career at stud, which saw him sire 48 stakes winners, he died in December of 1933. Peter Pan was inducted into Racing's Hall of Fame in 1956. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Another wonderful story and a trip down memory lane by Kurt Becker. Join me every single Saturday for that segment here on the program, Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. When I come back, I will welcome NBC's Lafitte Pinkai to the program. He'll look back on the Kentucky Derby and share his thoughts on this year's Preakness Stakes. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at FarmPaint.com. That's FarmPaint.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border Report, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. We begin with the Queen's Plate news. Saturday George, 30-1 in the Queen's Plate Winter Book, and according to his trainer Mike DiPaolo, Saturday George has grown a little bit and filled out, which means all systems are go. DiPaolo said, Saturday George spent the winter in Ocala with Slade and Kelly Callahan. He's coming along really nicely. He's been back here at Woodbine for about 2 weeks. He worked an easy 4 furlongs, 52 flat breezing, on April 27th, and he'll work 5/8 this week. He's ready to roll. In other Woodbine news, jockey Rafael Hernandez will be going into his 5th season at Woodbine, and he talked about building his business after some struggles early on. Hernandez said, the first year, it was kind of hard because I was new and no one really knew me. I had to build trust with trainers and owners. After I started getting more opportunities on the horses, I appreciated that because it showed they did trust me. It's hard to get into Woodbine because it's a very big riding colony. It's tough to be the new jockey coming into a new city and no one really knows you. It was hard for me. But the work that my agent, Tony Esposito, and I put in has paid off. Definitely a team effort. And if you're looking for a few horses to watch once the Woodbine meet gets rolling, you'll want to keep an eye on trainer Santino DiPaolo. Entering just his 5th season as a trainer at Woodbine, his 2021 stable has the look of his best group of horses yet. But DiPaolo is certainly no one-trick pony. The multi-talented 27-year-old recently won his 2nd Sovereign Award in the media category when his video, Dear Horse Racing, was voted Outstanding Film and Video. DiPaolo said he's excited about the prospects of his Ontario-bred 3-year-old Bodie, a son of Bodie Meister, Eminent Domain, a son of American Triple Crown winner American Pharaoh, Bodie's Tipsy, who was a promising 2-year-old in 2020, and Enchant Me, who competed in 2/3 of the 2020 Canadian Triple Crown. And that is your North of the Border report presented by Woodbine for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTV.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Medina Spirit and Mandalone are stride for stride. Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality closing on the outside. The four of them come into the final furlong. Mandalone fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie on the outside. Essential Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Baffert does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Mandalone was second. Hot Rod Charlie was third. Essential Quality was fourth. 2:01:02 the final time. Bob Baffert stands alone with 7 Derby wins.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Larry Colmus with the call. That was a call you heard on NBC television and right here on Horse Racing Radio Network last Saturday as part of our exclusive radio coverage. Bob Baffert stands alone. He does. There's no doubt about it. He is the GOAT when it comes to trainers in the history of the Kentucky Derby. How about all time? That's the poll question today at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't have social media, email me your thoughts, mike@horseracingradio.net. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? Absolutely. Not even close. And he's in the conversation. Those are your three choices on Twitter. And so far, he's in the conversation. 53% of you saying, yeah, I can see that. He's in the conversation. 27% saying absolutely. 20% now saying not even close. That number has increased significantly throughout the past hour of the program. Received a text message from a listener who said that I should change it to, is he the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time with three-year-olds? Let's face it, a lot of his success, you could say the majority of his success, has come with three-year-olds, but he's had some success with older horses. It's not like Bob Baffert can't train an older horse, but his program is geared toward three-year-olds. Opportunity certainly comes to mind as one horse trained by Bob Baffert, Game On Dude, another horse that had success as an older horse. He had Abel Tasman, right? Abel Tasman was a horse that was a very good older mare. There have been some, but let's face it, a lot of his success has indeed come with three-year-olds. But his program, a lot like Todd Pletcher's, by the way, geared toward getting those young horses to the big races, which they'll all tell you are huge when it comes to the stallion career of those runners. If you can be able to say that your horse, when he goes to stud, was a precocious two-year-old, that's big. That's big for breeders. They like to hear that. If you could say that your horse was a grade one winning three-year-old, a precocious two-year-old, grade one winning three-year-old, that's even better. So guys like Todd Pletcher and Bob Baffert, their programs are geared with those things in mind. Keep that as you look at their records. Improbable, an older horse that Bob had recently who was successful. So there are examples. Same thing with Todd Pletcher. Sometimes I think Todd Pletcher falls into that same category, and people say, okay, well, he's only a three-year-old trainer. That's not necessarily the case. Remember Vino Rosso? Breeders' Cup Classic? Yeah, these guys can train older horses, but yes, their programs are indeed geared toward three-year-olds. It's a very legitimate point. Awaiting Lafitte Pinkai from NBC Sports, he is set to join me. We are efforting Lafitte at this time, and we'll get a chance to talk to him about the Kentucky Derby, not just Medina Spirit and that gutsy win, but also look ahead to the Preakness Stakes. And if you're wondering about the Preakness, so Baffert will have a couple of chances to win his eighth Preakness Stakes. He'll have Medina Spirit and also Concert Tour, who last time out was third in the Arkansas Derby, could have gotten into the Kentucky Derby, but they made the decision to skip that race. Chad Brown now going to have a pair of runners. He'll have Crowded Trade and just announced that Risk Taking, who was seventh in the Wood Memorial last time out, will also join Crowded Trade. So Chad Brown will have two. Javier is only going to have one. As good as Javier Castellano is, he can only ride one. He will not have a pair. He'll ride Crowded Trade for Chad Brown. You heard from Robertino Diodoro earlier in the program. He has Keep Me in Mind, who's pointing for the Preakness Stakes. Steve Asmussen will run Midnight Bourbon. And I told you, look, there were a few horses in that race that were closing. For the most part, it was a merry-go-round race. The horses that were 1, 2, 3, 4 early in the race pretty much finished 1, 2, 3, 4. Right? Medina Spirit was first early. Mandaloon was up close. Mandaloon was third in the early going, a stalking position. Hot Rod Charlie was fifth, but not far off the pace. And Essential Quality was seventh. So, okay, so maybe not quite 1, 2, 3, 4, but they were all relatively close to the pace. They weren't, Essential Quality being seventh in the early going, was not all that far back. The horses that were far back that made runs, and there weren't many of them, Obesos, who was 12th early on, Midnight Bourbon, who was in that same 11-12 position, all the way, actually dropped back to 14th at one point, and Keep Me in Mind, who was dead last and made that big run. And when I talked to Robertino Diodoro about Keep Me in Mind, he said, yeah, if things had unfolded differently on the front end, maybe a bit more pace, more legitimate pace for horses to close into, maybe that would have helped us a little bit. But he can't be and he wasn't disappointed. He said he never wants to be satisfied with seventh in the Kentucky Derby, but I think there's such a thing as a good seventh. And that's what we saw from Keep Me in Mind. They have to be happy with that moving forward. And he brought up the point, too, and I'll get to Midnight Bourbon in a second, but he brought up the point, too, that he might have an advantage over Medina Spirit, who had to fight every step of the way. That stretch battle, he showed so much heart, so much courage, but, man, he had to fight for it. Coming back on 2 weeks' rest, does that take something? I think it has to. I think you have to look at Keep Me in Mind being the fresher horse. Whether he's good enough to turn the tables on Medina Spirit and everybody else in this race remains to be seen. We don't know if he's that caliber. But he certainly should be fresher because he only ran the last half mile or so. Ran hard. Medina Spirit. And look at the fractions, by the way. Look at what Johnny V did. I haven't talked about Johnny V enough this morning. Picking up his fourth Derby win. I keep talking about Baffert. But how about John Velasquez? 23 flat for the opening quarter. They went 46 for the half. And then Johnny gave Medina Spirit a little bit of a breather. 111.21 for three quarters. 135.98 for the mile, and they finished up 201.02. But that from the half-mile point to the six-furlong mark is when Johnny V really earned his money. And I know that they didn't come home fast, but the only way Medina Spirit was going to have anything left to hold off the challengers is if Johnny could give him a breather. And that ride, very reminiscent of what he did aboard Authentic last year, although Authentic did didn't have the favorable post position that Medina Spirit had. Authentic was on way on the outside. And Bob Baffert, who joined me this past week on my Trainer Talk program, which you can listen to that show, horseracingradio.net. Go back and listen to the interview. Bob talked about the fact that last year, that was the greatest ride he's ever received from any jockey in the history of his Derby. Now, he's won 7 Derbies. That was the greatest ride last year with Authentic. He's had good ones, he said, but that was the best. Medina Spirit, pretty good, too. That's what makes John Velasquez so ridiculously good. And I guess you could say, is John Velasquez the greatest jockey all time? Just like we're doing with the poll question with Bob Baffert today. I think that's a little, I think you'd get more yeses to that question. I certainly would say yeah. I would. I think John Velasquez, probably even much more than Bob Baffert, has a stake to that claim. The greatest jockey of all time. I could absolutely see. I mean, if you gave me a yes or no question and I had to answer that question, I'm going yes every single time. I mean, in my opinion, John Velasquez is that good. And he certainly did everything he could to get Medina Spirit home. Back to Midnight Bourbon for a minute, who, as I mentioned, will be going in the Preakness Stakes for Steve Aspus, and his race was really good, too. Here's a horse in Midnight Bourbon that, you know, Steve was hopeful that he was going to run a big race. He certainly proved that he belonged. You know, he had a bit of a rough start being bounced around early, too. Not horrible, but he was bumped a little bit. Everybody has a little bit of traffic trouble in the Kentucky Derby, except for Medina Spirit. But Midnight Bourbon was finishing really well, too. He finished a neck in front of Keep Me in Mind. But I still think Keep Me in Mind was finishing better of the two. But Midnight Bourbon's a horse that can sit a little bit closer. Robertino talked about Keep Me in Mind, how they got him back to his preferred running style. Well, maybe that was by design, but I think it was more a victim of circumstance. Yes, he likes to come from off the pace. I don't think they wanted to be dead last. I think they would have liked to have been a little closer so that they could be in a better stalking position turning for home. Midnight Bourbon has the ability, has a little bit more early speed than Keep Me in Mind, may suit the running style of Preakness winners a bit better. But again, Midnight Bourbon's a horse that has been knocking on the door, but we said the same thing about Medina Spirit. Knocking on the door, unable to break through. Maybe he finds a way to win next Saturday in the Preakness Stakes. We may see Dwayne Lucas. There is a chance we could see Dwayne Lucas with Ram, who took that allowance race at Churchill Downs. Who else? Unbridled Honor, Todd Pletcher. This is the only Triple Crown race Todd Pletcher has yet to win. So Unbridled Honor confirmed for the Preakness Stakes. Ron Bauer, who was third in the Bluegrass at Keeneland, skipped the Kentucky Derby for Mike McCarthy. He'll be ridden by Flavian Pratt. He's expected. He's confirmed now for the Preakness Stakes. And then you have the Japanese runner, France Go Diana. Adds a little intrigue. And has the services now of leading jockey Joel Rosario. How about that? Joel picking up the mount on the Japanese horse. So that's what the field is going to end up looking like next Saturday, at least at this point anyway. Now, there are still things that can happen, but that's the expected field. 2 for Bob Baffert, 2 for Chad Brown, 1 for Todd Pletcher, and a few horses coming back from the Kentucky Derby, but not many. Essential Quality, Brad Cox saying earlier this week that he wouldn't go. I thought Essential Quality ran okay. I thought what cost him was maybe being wide on both turns. He had a little bit of a wide trip. Maybe that was enough to make the difference when the margin wasn't all that big. Still had every chance through the lane to run down those other horses. And maybe that Bluegrass effort knocked him out a little bit. Maybe it took a little starch out of him. But he ran okay. Mandaloon was the one that really stepped up and ran big. And Brad Cox told our Tom Leach earlier in the week when Tom stopped by the barn to talk to him that if he got the Risen Star race out of Mandaloon, they were going to be pretty happy. If he got the Louisiana Derby race, they weren't going to be so happy. Well, they got the Risen Star effort and then some from Mandaloon. It was a great race. But, again, Brad Cox, knowing that there is no chance for a Triple Crown for his horses, saying, why push him? Let's do what's right by the horse. And I don't think this was covered enough in our sport. But, you know, so often when our sport finds itself on the defensive with organizations like PETA and other outside organizations that come after us, we don't do a good enough job at defending our play, saying, hey, whoa, wait a minute. Well, let's take a look at Brad Cox and what he decided to do. He could have kept going with Essential Quality. He could have kept going with Mandaloon. You don't think Brad Cox would love to win the Preakness Stakes? But he decided, in the best interest of his horses, looking out for the animal first, that he would bypass the Preakness. Let's get that message out there, too. That's another great message. So many positive stories like that in our sport and positive decisions that are made. All right, well, apparently Lafitte tied up this morning, won't be able to join us. We'll get a chance to catch up with him down the road, no doubt about it. When I come back, I'll get you ready for the third hour of the show. It begins with our In the Room segment with Sean Clancy, a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation, and so much more. I'll tell you all about it next. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
Kirkwood Stables has a long and storied history of producing and selling winners at the highest level.
Here comes the line. Club Pretty wins the Oaks.
Colfront wins it for the U.S.
From dead last to first, Tom's ready in the Woody Stevens.
But in the slop, it's Funny Duck by three.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup.
Big move by Chess Chief on the far outside. Here's Chess Chief.
Kirkwood Stables, proven success. Visit KirkwoodStables.com.
DeMarshall Yeh offers breeders a rare opportunity. His pedigree includes 9 Grade 1 winners under the first 3 dams, including classic winner Galileo Crone. A TDN rising star at 2, he went on to capture victories at Keeneland and Belmont, including the Grade 3 Pennine Ridge Stakes. By Sire of Sires Dubawi, whose top sons include the sensational Sire Knight of Thunder. The only stallion by Dubawi in Kentucky. DeMarshall Yeh, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Well, for a couple of months now, I have been telling you about the new outdoor superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters, elite outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, and it's a passion of mine because of the fact that I love to hunt, I love to fish, I love to get out in the outdoors, and that's pretty much what I do. When I'm not on radio, when I'm not sitting in a Pittsburgh Steeler game or watching my Steelers each and every week during the season, I'm out there in the woods doing something. I just absolutely love it, and if you're of that same mindset and you love to hunt and fish, Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore is the place to go. Again, it's in Nicholasville, Kentucky, so if you're local here in central Kentucky, stop by and see them. Just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road and owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. The Elite Outdoor Superstore really does have everything that you would possibly need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges, and they have a full line of bows. If you're going to look for a new bow for the archery season, you can go ahead and give them a test run in there on the two archery ranges. It's pretty cool. Stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And his wife, by the way, one heck of a cook. They have their hunting property where they host people from all over the world to come in and hunt here in central Kentucky. And they have a lodge, and she does all the cooking. And they have a cookbook, which you can pick up at the Superstore with all of her recipes. I've tried several, and they are fantastic. Ritz crackers with brown sugar wrapped in bacon. That's all I'm going to say. You have to get the cookbook when you stop into the Outdoor Superstore, but I promise you it'll be worth the visit to Nicholasville, Kentucky. And if you're going to be in town for any of the horse sales or Keeneland or anything like that, and you're a sporting enthusiast, go see them. All right, coming up in the second half of the program, it's going to be your third hour of the program. It's going to be very busy. I'll tell you all about that here in just a minute. If your local station is indeed leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680 or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. And when you head to our website, you can see all of the information for next week's Preakness broadcast. If you're just tuning in, that coverage comes your way at 5 o'clock Eastern time next Saturday. Myself, Kurt Becker, Tom Leach, Jeff Bloom, all part of the coverage team, will bring you coverage of the Middle Jewel. Done that every year since 2008. Very proud to be able to say that. I was thinking about that. Our first one was when Dave Rodman, the announcer, longtime announcer in Maryland, had that call of Big Brown. Big Brown barrels through Baltimore. One of the great Preakness calls. And that was our very first Preakness Stakes that we ever broadcast here on the network. Done it every year since. And proud and privileged to be able to bring it your way again this year here on HRN. If you want to stop over to our website, horseracingradio.net, you can check out the podcast of all of our shows, and you can listen live worldwide, and you can see all of the affiliates that will be carrying that coverage coming up. Couple other things. One in particular, the poll question. If you haven't heard it yet, I've been preaching about this throughout the program. Is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? Update for you, 51% still saying that he's in the conversation. But all of a sudden, not even close, is creeping even closer. Now, 22% of you saying, that's not even close. He's not in that conversation. He's not the greatest. 27% of you saying, absolutely. You can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. If you have an opinion on that question, let me know, and I'll try to update it one more time as we move throughout the remainder of the program. Third hour of the show, it always begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy, and this week a special replay of his visit with jockey Richard Migliori. I thought with the big day in New York and several great stakes on tap, which we're going to talk about later in the program, but I thought with the big day coming up, it would be fun to catch up with the Mig once again, because there were people that missed that, I'm sure, a few weeks ago when we aired it. So I wanted to replay it for you. So we're going to do that coming up in just a few minutes. It's about 15 minutes of Sean one-on-one with Richard Migliori. Buff Bradley, 10:25 Eastern time, looking back on his career. He is our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris. And the big A, Anthony Stabile, at 10:40 Eastern to preview all of the big action coming up at Belmont Park. later this afternoon. But that's going to do it for the first 2 hours of the Equine Forum this morning. Again, if your station's leaving us, stay with us on Sirius 219, XM 201, ESPN 680 in Louisville, or stream us worldwide, horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is coming up next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gavin's got a fight today. Scottson on the outside. Astilo Talentoso is third. Gavin's going to do it. It wasn't easy, but Gavin won it by almost two in the end. Jackie's Warrior fighting off the challenge of Dream Shake. These two, nose to nose, coming down to the wire. Here's the finish. Jackie's Warrior would not be denied in the Pat Day Mile.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
They're coming down to the line, and it's going to be very close. Oh, that was tight. Pernolium or domestic spending, their noses were right on the wire together. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Baffert does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Mandaloon was second. Hot Rod Charlie was third. Essential Quality was fourth. 2:01:02 the final time. Bob Baffert stands alone with seven Derby wins.
It was just an exciting day. Just unbelievable. And, you know, things worked out right all day long. We had a tough Friday, but this business, you just got to keep on going and things will change. And, you know, I'm still flying high. It was just an incredible, incredible weekend. And I'm just so happy for all my connections, all my people that work for me, my crew. It was just a team effort and it's unbelievable.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Well, so many of us still flying high after that Kentucky Oaks, Kentucky Derby weekend at Churchill Downs last Friday and Saturday. Welcome back to the program. Hour 3 rolling on. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. If you did miss any portion of the first couple of hours, my visits with Gary Falter from OwnerView, Francis Relihan from Sumaya U.S. Stables, Robertino Diodoro, all of those interviews, even Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Going to get you to that In the Room segment with Sean Clancy, a special replay of his visit with jockey Richard Migliori, which we aired on this program a few weeks back. But I was looking at some of the historical anniversaries on this 8th day of May, 2021. And you know, it was on May 8th, 1915, that H.P. Whitney's Regret became the first filly to win the Kentucky Derby. That was 40 years after the race's inception in 1875. But that was on May 8th, 1915. May 8th, 1937, Mary Hirsch, the daughter of Max Hirsch, who had conditioned 1936 Kentucky Derby winner Bold Venture, became the first woman trainer to saddle a runner in the Kentucky Derby. The horse was called No Sir, who was owned by Miss Hirsch, and finished 13th in the field of 20 that year. That was May 8th, 1937. So this day significant in racing history on a couple of different levels. All right, again, In the Room with Sean Clancy coming up momentarily. Buff Bradley going to be with me at 10:25 Eastern in the Big A. Anthony Stabile at right around 10:40 to preview the greatest stakes races at Belmont later today. But without further ado, we go to Sean Clancy for his one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Richard Migliori.
Four-length lead now by five, but they're coming down to the finish. Brilliantly ridden on the front end by Richard Migliori. Brilliantly ridden by Richard Migliori. Richard Migliori.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
All
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with the MIG, retired jockey Richard Migliori. The 56-year-old won 4,450 races over a stellar 30-year career, starting with an Eclipse Award as leading apprentice in 1981 and rolling through meet titles on the New York circuit, a Breeders' Cup win aboard Desert Code, stakes wins on the likes of Student Council, Friends Lake Win, Artie Schiller, Hidden Lake, and the one and only Four-Star Dave. Welcome to the show, Richie.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, when you hear those names, you know, kind of brings me back, and certainly Four-Star Dave is a horse you and I both had a lot of affection for. You got to gallop him. I got to ride him, the Sultan of Saratoga.
No, he was the best. I mean, I love the way you rode him. You would be aggressive. I mean, he's kind of your type of horse, right? Be aggressive, put him up in the race.
Well, I always believed in getting your position going forward, you know, particularly the era of riders that I came around in with, you know, I should say, you know, Angel Cordero, Jacinto Vasquez, you know, all these guys, they got their position going forward and they fought for position, you know, guarded the inside jealously. You know, it seems a little bit different now. Maybe, you know, I'll come off sounding like the old guy back in my day, but.
We are old.
Well, no, you know, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. And it goes by fast, too. But, you know, it was a privilege to, you know, be an apprentice with a room full of Hall of Famers like that and basically learn to ride by, you know, just watching, observing their habits, how they approach things, what they did, and certainly schooling you. You'd learn your lessons, and if you didn't learn, then you just had no aptitude for it because you were riding with the best.
Yeah, who were your idols growing up? I mean, before you started riding and then in the room, who did you really watch and try to emulate?
Well, when I was a kid, I mean, Shoemaker was an obvious, you know, he was such a, you know, mainstream guy beyond just being a jockey. He was on commercials and the Tonight Show. And I remember when I was 10, I already knew I wanted to be a jockey. Everybody, you know, kid growing up in Brooklyn wants to be a jockey. Everybody thought I had a screw loose or like, you know, that was it was a phase, I guess. But my grandfather gave me the book, The Shoe, It had all these incredible pictures of Shoemaker and you know, Santa Anita, and it just captured my imagination. And my grandfather inscribed, "I'm sure you'll do as well as him." And I, obviously, that would have been an incredible, lofty goal. But just the fact that, you know, about 5 years after my grandfather gave me that book, I'm getting the Eclipse Award by Shoemaker, which, it happened pretty quick.
Right, for sure. Yeah, very different style, though. I mean, he was little and light, and you were much taller. I mean, who did you try to emulate style-wise?
Well, you know, I used to look at Baeza a lot before I started riding because everybody talked about him being taller and angular, and that was certainly me. And then when I first started riding, Cassius Musen had won the Eclipse Award the year before me, and he was tall, and I loved the way his seat. I loved the way he, you know, folded up on a horse. There was so many angles, but that's what you had to do to manage your height. And then in the room, there were so many influences. I mean, Eddie Maple was a tremendous influence for me. We had the same valet for years. I could be mercurial. I could be, you know, I win five and I'm over the moon and get beat on a favorite and looking to fight somebody and upset. And one day he looked at me, and I was still a kid, probably 18 or something, and he said, "Okay, you got beat on a couple of favorites today," because I was mad. And he goes, "What are you going to do tomorrow morning?" And I said, "Oh, I'm going to get up early. I'll be at the track. I'm getting on horses." And he goes, "Okay, what if you had won five today? What would you be doing tomorrow morning?" And I said, "Get up early, go to the track, get on horses." He goes, "So why don't you just take it in stride, just be even?" And, you know, they called him Steady Eddie for a reason. You know, dieting. I had obsessed about food, and he looked at me one day and said, "You know, food's always going to be there." And it kind of just put it in a different perspective for me. But Eddie certainly was that kind of influence in the room for me.
Yeah, knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently? I mean, would you have? I mean, we've talked about it over the years. Would you have not been? It seemed like I think you were used to press and really be. I mean, really try to show everybody. You know, I think that was part of your talent too. I think it's part of why you got where you did. But now with perspective, what would you do anything differently?
Yeah, I definitely would. I definitely tried to make things happen, particularly if I was, I won't even say slumping, just maybe struggling a little bit. I was going to create. I wasn't going to let it come to me. I was going to go make it happen. And you know, you're talking about a relationship with your horses and animal, and sometimes I would get lost with that a little bit. I got better at it the last few years of my career. And honestly, frankly, working with Godolphin and those kind of horses the last 2 years of my career, I had come full circle. Like when I was a kid, I was more of a horseman. In the middle of my career, I was more of a jockey. And then at the end of my career, last 2 years of my career, honestly, I felt like I was back to being the horseman and more proud of myself, more proud of how I was approaching it, how I was doing it. Even when I had great success looking back now, you know, and obviously the benefit of hindsight and clarity, there was a point where the horse was just a vehicle to get me to the winner's circle. And I really don't look back at that with pride, even though I was having tremendous, success. I just didn't think I was respecting my relationship with the horse as much as I should have been.
And that's something you learned as you went along, I guess. I mean, that is something you kind of had to recognize and almost take a step back. And maybe you were even better when you did take that step back slightly.
Well, I'm certainly much prouder of the rider I was, you know, when I got through that period. I came up under contract to Steve DeMauro, and you really did bring around, so much so that I won the Eclipse Award, and the next day I'm in the barn at 5 o'clock in the morning because I still rubbed the pony. So I had to get the pony stall done and get him tacked up. And that was, back then I probably didn't appreciate that. I probably resented some of the things I had to do. And now I'm so happy that I had that experience and understanding how he taught me to be a horseman, a horse person, and not just a jockey, and not take it for granted, understand the process. But like I said, then in the middle of my career, here I am, I'm only in the middle of my career, like 4 or 5 years into my career, I was, I'm the MIG, I'm a jockey, I got to win. I won almost 300 races in 1985 at 20 years old, but that's not one of my proudest seasons, I have to be honest. Later on, I was always comfortable, Sean, riding for a stable and being a part of that stable because of my upbringing under contract and being a key member of the team. And being at the barn every morning, I excelled when I rode, first call for Hushin because I was involved. First call for Kimmel, I was involved. And one day, Rick Mattee had a horse out on the track. He was Saeed Bin Sarur's assistant in the States for Godolphin. And the horse had bolted and was running off down the outside fence with the exercise rider. And he turned to me and said, I think I got to tell them to bring this horse home. He's one for one in England, but he's just uncontrollable. And I asked him to get on the horse. And I said, I'd like a crack at him. He said, you want to get on that thing? Because this horse was going 90 miles an hour down the outside fence. And I said, I think I might be all right with him, And I worked him a week later, and I was not on the outside fence, but I wasn't on the inside fence. I was probably in the middle somewhere. And came back, what do you think? I think, let me give this another try. And it was a little better. Well, the horse wound up being Afrashad, and he won the fall highweight. He won the Mosley at Suffolk. And, he actually came around, and he and I got on pretty good. And that led me to getting the mount with Flashing. But the reason I brought all that up was that was the scenario I think I thrived in, that, go to the barn, talk about the horses, get on them, come up with little different insights, different ideas, and have a familiarity that a lot of times when you're riding 1,000 races a year or 1,500 races a year, you just don't have the time to create that relationship.
Oh, for sure. That's the really rewarding part of being a jockey is when you're more involved and almost part of the team and part almost training the horse a little bit, not picking out races, but just trying to develop a horse. And I think that's what you had certainly at the beginning and the end, I guess. So your career kind of came full circle in that respect.
It really did. And I'm, I really didn't want to stop riding. And I lamented a few times to my wife early on about, I would have loved to have, won a nice race, felt just that satisfaction, hopped off, gave the horse a pat, and that was, you know, that's the end of it. And she looked at me and laughed. She said, "You were never going to do that. You were going to ride until they made you stop." And that's what happened. So,
right.
And she's right.
One last question, and this is one I borrow from my favorite podcast, How I Built This. But when you look back at your success, how much of it was hard work, talent, and how much of it was luck? I mean, when you look back at your career?
I think the majority of it, you know, I think it's a confluence of all of those things, but the majority of it was hard work. I was not a natural rider. I was not built to be a jockey. I really had to force my body into, that role. And, you know, and it was great. I mean, I was lucky in the respect that I hooked on with Steve DeMauro very young. To have him coming off of years with Wajima and Dearly Precious and winning the Eclipse Award, for him to open up his shed row and put me under contract gave me instant credibility in people's eyes. And then he really had a plan for me. Like I said, that I probably didn't understand so much when I was young, and I'd get, you know, upset about something and why isn't he letting me ride yet? Or why isn't this happening? He was thoughtful about it, and he basically mapped out my career and how it was going to go and teaching me. And frankly, I grew up in his barn. He was, you know, like a surrogate father to me. So that was extremely lucky. And then I think anybody who has any success in any athletic endeavor has to have a certain inherent amount of natural ability. But I think – you know, you and I have spoken, and I was pretty depressed for a while about not being able to ride anymore, particularly when I felt physically better, that, you know, like, well, why can't I do this? And I was going someplace with this, and let's see how many concussions I get.
I can match you too. I can go one for one with you. Don't worry.
No, but basically, you know, looking back on it and knowing that I was able to get the most out of the ability that I had, that whatever gifts God gave me, I didn't leave anything out there. I put it all out there and did the very best I could with whatever God-given ability I had. And that's the only thing that was able to kind of get me out of that depressed feeling of, well, you know what? I couldn't have done more. Like if I had been a guy that kind of gave it a half effort and knew that I could have done better with my career, rode more winners or done something different, that I couldn't live with. That I think I would still be depressed over it. Cause, and I tell kids this, you know, young riders, I talk to them all the time. There is a day that it'll be your last ride. For every athlete, there's a baseball player, last at bat, football player, last play. Hopefully it's like Jerry Bailey, Chris McCarron, Pat Day, when you decide you've had enough. Majority of guys don't get to make that decision. You don't want to look back on it when it's over, because when it's over, it's over. That was your last ride that I could have done better, because there's not a do-over. And it's just important to make the most out of your abilities and be the best you can be.
No doubt. You did that better than anybody. We lost Steve DeMauro last summer. If you could have one last conversation with him, what would you say to him?
Well, I'm so blessed that we had dinner the previous summer at Saratoga, and he turned to me during the dinner and said, "I want you to know how proud I am of you." That he goes, "You know, you were a tremendous rider, and I'm so happy you retired. I didn't want to see you get hurt anymore, but what you've been able to do since your career ended," he goes, "I watch you, and I can't tell you how proud I am of you." And I can't say how much that meant to me. And that we had at least that opportunity to have a conversation about not me as the kid who came up in his barn as a jockey, but the man that he helped shape.
That's Richie Migliori. Steve DeMauro and all of us are proud of you, and it was a joy to watch your career, and we're thankful you're still involved in the sport.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on.
Those In the Room segments brought to you every single week by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. That is the website of Sean Clancy, his brother Joe, and their good friend Tom Law, who works with them. It is a great website. If you're a horse racing fan, head over there. This is horseracing.com. You won't be disappointed. You can also link to many of our In the Room segments. They're all available for you on our website, but many of those also available through thisishorseracing.com. And my thanks to Sean for putting that together. That visit with Richie, so, so good. Every single one of those visits, because of the fact that Sean has played the game, those one-on-one conversations, just really delightful. And if you missed any of them, head back, spend some time listening to them. If you're a fan of the sport, you won't be disappointed. They're there for you on our website, horseracingradio.net, and thisishorseracing.com. All right, coming up next, I'll visit with trainer Buff Bradley, who this week announced that he would retire at the end of the Churchill meet. It's been a wonderful career. We'll look back on it next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
Kirkwood Stables has a long and storied history of producing and selling winners at the highest level.
Here comes the line. Love Pretty wins the Oaks.
Cole Front wins it for the U.S.
From dead last to first, Tom's Redding and the Woody Stevens.
But in the slop, it's Funny Duck by three.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup.
Big move by Chess Chief on the far outside. Here's Chess Chief.
Kirkwood Stables, proven success. Visit KirkwoodStables.com.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Tightening a horse's girth too much will affect performance, not because of constricting the chest and preventing the lungs from expanding, but because it decreases the effectiveness of the muscles around the front of the chest and shoulder that move the forelegs. For more Flair Facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper, champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
At the 16th pole, it is Brass Hat, and he's getting away from Fairbanks Lane. And Brass Hat and Willie Martinez have won the NASCAR.
Down to the 16th pole, Judy the Beauty, Dance Card on the outside running after Rupee Doll Dixon for all she has, and she has enough to win it! Rupee Doll did it again!
And here comes Divisadero flying down the crown of the course. Beat Patrol trying to dig down. Divisadero rallying from behind, but Beat Patrol has something left for the final 16th. Divisadero surges up alongside and surges to win it. Divisadero.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. A little trip down memory lane for my next guest, the 57-year-old conditioner, Buff Bradley, who will call it a career at the end of the Churchill Spring Meeting. Those three horses, Brass Hat, Groupie Doll, Divisadero, I guess you could throw the player in there too, horses that meant so much to Buff, to his career, to his family, and it is a career that I know he will miss, but looking forward to the next chapter in the life and the career of Buff Bradley. He's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and he is, by the way, our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris on this Saturday morning. Buff, congratulations on that honor, and congratulations on a remarkable career.
Hey, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, happy to be able to visit with you and kind of walk back through some of the fondest memories that you have. This could not have been an easy decision for you, though, my friend.
No, and it's something I've been thinking about for a while, and it wasn't a very easy decision to make, and then it wasn't easy to really follow through with, you know, having to tell all of my clients and my employees. But, you know, I feel like that they've all been on board and understand my reasons and have backed me 100%.
You know, you started doing this, training horses in 1993, so it's been a while. what are you going to do from here?
You know, that's still up in the air. I have to do something because I think I've got enough money to run me for about 3 hours after I quit this. But, I want to do something within the thoroughbred industry, I hope, and I hope to maybe get a job with a racetrack. You know, I feel like that I do know a large majority of the people on the backside and understand the everyday issues that they may have, so that, you know, and I do understand a bit of the front side. You know, I've been on a lot of committees and have I've been in some meetings, quite a few meetings, with talks with upper management. So I feel like that, you know, I can see both sides of things and feel that I can be very fair about it in judging what goes on. So, you know, I've put it out there to Churchill, Ellis, and Keeneland that, you know, that I'm interested, and if they have an opening at some point in the near future, that I would like to apply. And so they've been receptive. I've talked to some pretty good people, so we'll see what happens now.
Well, it's a pretty good resume that you put together when you think about your experience being around the game, breeding horses, raising horses, training horses. You come from a family business, a family philosophy, and you train 575 winners in your career so far, Buff, and multiple greatest stakes winners. And we just heard that little montage of Brass Hat, Groupie Doll, and Divisadero. Three horses that I know when you look back on everything you've accomplished, they're going to hold a special place in your heart.
Oh, definitely will. I mean, they, you know, Brass Hat, you know, being the first, was very special for my father and I, you know, and that we got to travel around a lot with him, and we, you know, we really enjoyed it. There wasn't a lot of pressures. It was just a lot of fun. And, you know, and I think that got us to Groupie Doll. We probably wouldn't have had Groupie Doll had we not had Brass Hat to kind of carry us forward. So I always look at it. Everybody say, what's your favorite? I can't say there's ever a favorite. I can tell you, you know, I've enjoyed all of them, enjoyed all the trips that, that Brass Hat took us on. And, same for Groupie Doll. I mean, she was, as you know, very special in a lot. And I can say the last 10 years of my father's life on this earth that he enjoyed it immensely because he did a lot of other things, but the horses was always his number one thing to do and to watch and to follow.
You know, I can remember talking about Groupie Doll, I can remember, Buff, when she sold at Keeneland, and I had the privilege to be there with you and your family, and there wasn't a dry eye in the place when you had to say goodbye to her. The horses, they truly become like a part of your family, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I've got several on my farm that are still family. You know, they're, you know, Brass Hat is at the farm and he'll remain there. I'm selling a large portion of the farm, but am going to keep enough for the retired horses and a few of my own. And he'll live out his days there for sure. As goes for the player, I'm hoping he'll get to stay there too, as long as we got enough room there for him. With him being a stallion and everything, it's tougher to keep those in a smaller area. But you know, he's one of my favorites of all time too. You know, he's been a very special horse.
What makes the player so special?
You know, I got attached to him early on, and he just had such a unique personality, and I think it's probably his personality and how I was able to put that out there to the public and post things on him through social media that really it got a lot of people interested in following him, and I think that was pretty neat. And so I got, you know, I looked for things that, you know, that he did that were unique that people outside the racing world would even like. So it was fun to do that, and it still is fun to do that. I mean, I post pictures all the time on his Facebook page of him doing his silly little things. And he just, from day one, he was always a little bit quirky, I guess you could say, but just a personality. But, I mean, as far as a racehorse, I think he was a super nice, super nice horse, and just had tons of ability, and I think was just coming into his own when he was injured.
You said that when people ask you about your favorites, that there's really no way you could choose. It's not Brass Hat over Groupie Doll or Groupie Doll over Divisadero or the player. It doesn't work like that. They're all very special, and they're all very special for different reasons. When you think back on your career, Buff, what are some of the memories that are always going to stand out to you first and foremost?
Well, I could say on just speaking of those four horses, you know, it's just like they all were different in what they did. You know, Groupie Doll was a sprinter, so you, and I'd say probably my favorite race out of her was the Humana Distaff when she broke and still set has the track record for 7/8 in 120.44. You know, I think that was just a special day, and I mean, you know, Rajiv Mirage was gearing her down when she did that, and that was one of the that race there my father was at, and I think he really enjoyed that race, so it made it a little bit more special for me. Brass Hat, you know, I can't tell you how many. I mean, he was every one of his races were just unique. You know, he went long on the dirt, but and probably the day that he broke the track record at Churchill, going a mile on the 16th and being off a year in an allowance race was that was really rewarding for him to come back and do what he did. And then Divisadero, you know, he won three times on Derby Day, and that was just like every time you just would go wow, because he loved Churchill Downs and he loved just rolling down the lane. And I think he loved doing it for a crowd too, and love that horse as well. And I've got, you know, had a I was lucky enough to have a season to him, and we just pulled a filly out of him by him the other night.
Oh wow, really special. The beat goes on, right? The next generation.
Right, the next generation, and same as the player. You know, he was. You know, always love to see him run, but you know, now we're getting his babies on the ground, and I mean, they're just like him, just very unique and tons of personality. And you know, I feel like that goes over into the racing part of it too. You know, when they're smart enough to be a racehorse.
You know, I'm going to tell you, Buff, I'll shoot you straight. We've known each other for a long time, and when I asked you about your fondest memories in your career, I'm a little disappointed that being an analyst on our Kentucky Derby broadcast with us didn't make the list.
Well, I was just talking about horses. I was getting to that.
That year was so much fun. I can remember you sitting up there with Kurt and I, and it was a lot of fun to have you as part of the team that year. And, you know, who knows, maybe now that you're getting a little more time on your hands, maybe we'll do it again.
No, that's always fun, and especially talking with you and Kurt. You know, you both are more knowledgeable than I am on that side of it, but it was really – that was a fun day. It really was to sit up there and watch.
Think?
And that's the only time that I've watched the races on Derby Day from the front side, except when I had a horse running.
Yeah, you're usually positioned out in the barn area somewhere, right?
Right.
Yeah. Talking with Buff Bradley, who will wrap up his training career at the end of the Churchill spring meet, what's the actual date, Buff, that you're going to make the move?
I guess July 1st. You know, they close, and I kind of picked at the end of Churchill, you know, this is was my home track. It was the first place I had a winner in 93. And, you know, I, know that Churchill was going to close for training even in the summer months as they're installing a new turf course. So everybody was going to have to move one way or the other. It wasn't like I'm going to have to jostle around and move horses around for people. I mean, it's going to happen anyhow. Same for my help. They were going to have to move anyhow. So I feel like that was going to be a good time to just kind of start dispersing and getting rid of horses.
What do you think you're going to miss most about training horses, Buff?
I don't know. I don't even think I'll be able to sleep in. You know, I get up every morning and enjoy going to the track and seeing the horses and, you know, walk around the barn, feeding them treats, looking at them, watching them. I think, you know, the excitement is usually with the young horses coming along, but I enjoy keeping the older horses around too. So it's, you know, I don't know exactly what's going to get me the most. I'm sure it's going to be hard for me. It will be, but that's what it is. I'm happy with my decision to do this at this time, and I'm not going to, really, I hope I could sleep in a little bit, but I don't have to sleep late, but I'd like to get a couple more hours in the morning.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, Buff, there are horse trainers and there are horsemen, and you are both. You're a horseman first, you're a horse trainer second, in my opinion anyways. You do them both extremely well, and you're going to be missed on the training side of things, but it's great to hear that you're looking to stay involved in the sport in some capacity. I know that's going to be music to the ears of so many people that are fans of yours, myself included. And I can tell you this, you are forever entrenched in the history of HRN, because not only did you and I meet before I even started on radio when I was working with Barb Borden and Horse ID at Keeneland back in the early 2000s, but when I started the network, our first broadcast live from Gulfstream Park, which barely got on the air that year, by the way, but we made it, was Brass Hat winning the Don Handicap in 2006. And I'll never forget, it was a nasty, rainy day, muddy track. Willie Martinez came back to our broadcast position, which was tucked away in a little room somewhere. We couldn't even see the races. And he came in, and he spent about 30 minutes with us after the race, covered in mud, talking about that trip with Brass Hat. And it launched the network. It was the start of everything for us. And it was all because of a horse that you trained down at Gulfstream Park.
No, that was pretty cool. And that was, I didn't even know it rained that day.
he was covered.
That was our special day, a grade one winner. And, yeah, that track was a mess. And I thought, he just went by those. When he took off at the 3/8 pole, I was like, wow. And just threw away. That was a heck of a good race.
Certainly was. There were many of those and many great memories. And, Buff, listen, I appreciate the visit here this morning, my friend. Really glad you took the time to do it. And can't wait to see what the future holds for Buff Bradley. And hopefully we'll get a chance to spend more time together on the radio.
Yeah, and thank you much. I'm just stepping away from training. I'll be around. People are going to see me, and I hope they see me a lot more.
Fantastic. Buff Bradley here on HRN. Buff, appreciate it, buddy. All the best.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, you talk about one of the good guys in the sport. You won't hear one person say a bad word about Buff Bradley, myself included. I can still remember meeting him at Keeneland when I was working there in Horse ID. He was one of the very first people I met in the business, and it was just like meeting a family member. He was that welcoming and that open, and that's just Buff Bradley. That's who he is. He'll continue to be that way. And comes from a wonderful family, and wish him all the best in his next endeavor. And glad to hear he'll be sticking around in thoroughbred racing. That's a huge gain for the sport of thoroughbred racing. When I come back, I'll turn our attention to Elmont, New York, and a huge card at Belmont today. The Big A, speaking of huge things, the Big A, Anthony Stabile, will be here to break it all down for you. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
The spring meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. New for this year's meet will be the Stephen Foster Preview Day on May 29th with 7 stakes races as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with 7 total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning You're In Fleur-de-Lis for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 5 black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in 6 Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Here comes NX Now. Here comes Chess's Dream. On the outside and down the middle, it's Hidden Enemy. They're inside the final furlong. It is Win From Within with the rail in the lead. And to the outside, it's Dujour. Dujour goes on by. Dujour and Flavian Brock to win.
Dujour with a huge win in the Grade 2 American Turf, part of a most memorable weekend beneath the Twin Spires for Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, and Dujour is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Bernardini. Dujour became his 29th graded stakes winner and 50th stakes winner as a broodmare sire. He is the fastest to both of those marks in history. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Better Talk Downs only 2 lengths from the lead. Rousing Victory is there on the far outside, and they're coming down to the final furlong. Relax Gesture and King's Drama. Better Talk Now, ask for everything he has as they come down to that final furlong. Better Talk Now on the outside. Relax Gesture in between those two. King's Drama, a spine-tingling stretch drive here. And here's Better Talk Now to win it by a head. Ahead over King's Drama and Relax Gesture. Van Gillis was fourth in a thriller in the Man of War.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Anytime you can get a Tom Durkin call on the show where he uses the phrase spine-tingling stretch battle, you have to do it. And that was Better Talk Now in 2005, 16 years ago, for trainer Graham Motion winning the Man of War at Belmont Park under Hall of Fame jockey Ramon Dominguez. It was Graham's only victory in the race to date, but he's back with another live opportunity to add a second one to his resume later this afternoon. It is part of a huge afternoon of thoroughbred racing at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, and who knows more about that than the Big A, Anthony Stabile. He's with me now here on HRN. Happy Man of War Day, Big A.
Yeah, looking forward to this day every year. To me, it's more about the Peter Pan with a look to the 153rd Belmont Stakes in 4 weeks. But, yeah, Man of War Day, nice little package day here with the 5 graded stakes, Mike, and a little bit of a preview to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival that kicks off Thursday, June 3rd here at Belmont. Looking forward to a great day of racing. And as I sit in the parking lot getting ready for Talking Horses with Andy Serling, it's nice to see a couple of fans waiting to get inside with their tickets. We let fans back in starting last Saturday, and it's been great to have some fans here and stuff as we get closer and closer to the Belmont. It's a good feeling to have folks around.
What's the protocol? How many fans expected to be in attendance today?
We're allowed to have, I believe, 11,000.
Okay.
Which doesn't happen much anymore. Got to buy your tickets beforehand. Proof of vaccine, 72-hour COVID test. Social distancing is in effect, but there are people around the paddock and stuff. You're allowed to roam about as long as you have your mask on, which is great because at first I didn't know how that was going to work. Here in New York, the team sports were treated differently from any racetracks, horse racing, auto racing. And I think that was because of the commiserating. You know, I know when you go to auto races, you sit on bleacher seating, and at the track, it's just, you know, grab a bench and stuff. And I didn't know if they were going to allow that, but we had it yesterday. We walked off the set of Talking Horses, and our friend Brian was waiting for us. You know, people we haven't seen now in 18 months, it's an emotional thing coming to the racetrack. And I know I literally teared up when I was, you know, listening to our Oaks coverage here on HRN and watching on the NBC, the NBC sports feed, seeing fans at the track. And, you know, it was the closest I felt to us getting back to normal, you know, just because of how connected I am to the game.
Yeah.
And we all are.
Great comments. And I agree 100%. I think in the open of our Kentucky Derby broadcast last week, I had mentioned that the Kentucky Derby feels like the Kentucky Derby, which, of course, it didn't a year ago. And so many major sports did not, because they were being played in either bubbles or without fans. And it was so nice to see. And let's hope that things continue to progress in the right direction and we can continue to move toward having full grandstands, full clubhouses eventually. I know Saratoga, we're looking forward to that this summer. There will be fans at Saratoga, which is welcome news to everybody. And we're getting there, Big A. One step at a time, we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there, you know, and with the Preakness next week and the Belmont in 4 weeks, the Beast comes back next Sunday. There's a lot of good things to look forward to, Baron.
The Beast of the Belmont. I can't wait to hear more about that. Let's talk about the greatest stakes that we're going to see today. And maybe if we have time, we can sneak in a quick shot for the Belmont Stakes. But as you mentioned, several greatest stakes. It begins with race four, which is the grade three Run Happy. 6 furlongs on the main track. And here's our old friend, Belmont-loving Firenze Fire, is the 4-5 morning line favorite. What's he like? Like 100 years old now? He's been around forever.
He's amazing. 6 years old, 31 wins, 31 starts, a dozen wins. He's near and dear to my heart. He was one of the first stakes winners I've ever called in the booth when he took the Gravesend a couple of years ago at the Big A with Jose Lascano aboard. He's just such a cool horse, Mike. You know, even last year, I mean, how many horses run once, let alone twice, after the Breeders' Cup? He did that a couple of years ago. A couple of years ago after the Breeders' Cup, he ran 3 times before he got a break, and that break was necessitated by the Jason Service suspension. And Kelly Breen has done an amazing job managing Firenze Fire since. He's got 2 wins with him, including the Vosburgh over this course last year. He was a bang-up third in the Breeders' Cup sprint behind Whitmore and CZ Rocket, who have renewed their rivalry in a nice way this year. And he was good in the Mr. Prospect, and now he got a well-deserved break after cramming a lot of racing into a short amount of time last year. You feel he's Hickory. He's 5-for-8 at Belmont. He's 6-for-12 going 6 furlongs. He gets one of the hottest riders in the world in Rod Ortiz Jr. I think the biggest problem for him is the horse drawn right next to him, Chateau, is very, very fast, and he is going to be on a loose lead today. Firenze Fire is probably going to be the one to do the dirty work, because he's really the only one in here that can do the dirty work. And I don't envy that position with Chateau, because Chateau is a very, very fast animal.
You know, when Firenze Fire won that Gravesend that you referred to back in December of 2019, he only won by a head. At any point did you throw in the term spine tingling or into the breech or flared nostril? Did any of those come out in honor of Tom Durkin?
No, it was one of my favorite calls that I've given. I mean, I sound like such an egomaniac. It was Firenze Fire hooks him, and Firenze Fire gets him in the Gravesend. He chased down his stablemate, Happy Farm, who was looking to go back-to-back in stakes races. It was a fun race, and you can just tell, you know, Bobby Newman and I on race day talk about this a lot. These horses that come back after the Breeders' Cup, more often than not, they don't run as well as they usually do, because they're geared up to fire their best shot at the Breeders' Cup. That makes a ton of sense, right? Well, he's the kind of horse where 2 years ago, after finishing 5th in the sprint, he won the Fabulous Strikeout at Penn for the winter sprints. He won the Gravesend at Aqueduct, and then he won the General George at Laurel all within 3.5 months of his Breeders' Cup race. And he's so cool because he did it again this year. He just missed it and missed the Prospector. So he's a horse that he's kind of the antithesis of that. He fires, he rings the bell and answers the bell whenever Jason Service let him over, and now when Kelly Breen leaves him over. He's such a cool horse.
Yeah, I want to make sure we have time to talk about the other graded stakes. So we have about 6 or 7 minutes left before I have to get to the final commercial break in the show, Big A. But I do want to mention that Bobby Newman, who is back in the booth now calling races at Prairie Meadows, sounded fantastic yesterday. It was so good to hear him in the booth.
Yeah, he did. It's so great to hear Bobby in there, and I'm looking forward to listening to some more tonight.
Yeah, super talented. All right, race six is the Grade 3 Bogey, mile and a 16th on the turf course. How'd you see that one?
Three Breeders' Cup, filly and mare turf. Fillies coming out of there. I like Harvey's Little Goyle and Lemister. I think the distance is going to be a big play a big role here, Mike. I think, you know, Nay Lady Nay is probably a cup below the top three, and Civil Union being the third to go along with Harvey's Little Goyle and Lemister, she probably needs more ground. I think of all these three fillies who are returning off different layoffs, Civil Union's the one where this is more of the jumping off point, where I would imagine Harvey's Little Goyle has a better chance at the shorter distance. And then Lemister comes in for Chad Brown and Peter Brandt, gets her at Ortiz Jr. She won a grade two over at the Curragh last year as a three-year-old. She beat all the fillies, and now she has the break and first-time Chad Brown. They're the two for me, Harvey's Little Goyle and Lemister.
The Bogey is followed by the grade three Vagrancy, which is race seven, has a post time of 4:06 Eastern. 6.5 furlongs on the main track for the older females. What do you think?
A couple of scratches come out of here. The number 4, Kiss the Girl, and number 7, French Empire. I know Bobby liked French Empire last night on the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. This is another race, kind of like the Chateau Firenze Fire deal. Stady Lady is going to be loose on the lead now. I question her class. She got her first Open Company Stakes win in the correction last time out. She went gate to wire. She was very fortunate to go gate to wire that day. I don't know what Piani Bianchi does from the rail. I don't know what I like Victim of Love with Joel Rosario for Todd Beattie. Todd doesn't ship a lot of horses into New York. I would imagine Victim of Love is right off of Sadie Lady. That's who I want in here. I think I want the trip. But now with the two long shots coming out, I think you can make a case for any of these fillies. I mean, like I said, Sadie Lady can get loose. Piani Bianchi's earned over 600,000. Victim of Love is going to get the trip. On her way is as solid as they come. And Pacific Gale has kind of found her form now in her six-year-old year. She won a couple of graded stakes at Gulfstream in her last two.
All right, good stuff. Talking with the Big A, Anthony Stabile. You can catch him on Talking Horses coming up in just a little bit on the Naira TV feed. And you can catch him every single week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as part of our Race Day team, the Bristnet.com call-in show, and the Naira Betts Weekend Stakes Preview Show. Let's talk about the Peter Pan Race 9. You said that this was one of the highlights for you every year, and it certainly is this year, too. How'd you see the Peter Pan?
Risk-taking comes out. Chad Brown's going to run him next Saturday in the Preakness along with Crowded Trade. Javier Castellano runs Crowded Trade. Jose Ortiz going to go down to ride Risk-taking in that Preakness. This goes through the newest Hall of Famer now, I think, Todd Pletcher. Overtook was the most interesting horse after Risk-taking in here for me. Todd was going to run him along with the eventual first two finishers from the Wood Memorial, Bourbonneck and Dynamic One, in the Wood. He didn't like the way this horse was training. He backed off. He let him find himself. In fact, he didn't return to the work tab for 4 weeks until Wood Memorial Day. And he's worked a steady diet of half miles down at Palm Beach Downs, Todd's fall, winter, and spring headquarters. He's training forwardly for the late race. He gets Johnny Velasquez in the saddle for the first time. The problem with him is he doesn't have any speed, none whatsoever. But Nova Rags has some speed right to his outside. The other Todd Pletcher horse in the race, Promise Keeper, can show some speed. Wolfie's Dynaghost, a half to the great Saddler's Joy, who's a mile and a half turf horse. Wolfie's Dynaghost broke his maiden going 7 furlongs on the main track at Aqueduct back in November, six months ago. We haven't seen him since, so he's going to return fresh. I think Overtook will have enough pace to run into today. I like Overtook. I like Nova Rags getting back to the one turn and maybe being the speed of the speed in here.
It's a good race, good betting race, too. 5:12 Eastern is the post time for the Grade 3 Peter Pan. The final grade of stakes, the Grade 1 Man of War, mile and 3/8 on that inner turf course at Belmont this afternoon. Again, pretty well-matched field in here. How'd you see it?
Yeah, this is the opportunity everybody gets for me to play my Bill Mott card and for me to get harassed by everybody in the country. Moon Over Miami is the most interesting horse on this card today, Mike, and this is a fun card. He's interesting. He made two starts against older stakes horses this year when he turned four. He ran third in the Macdomeda down at Gulfstream. He ran second in the Pan Am, two grade twos. No, the pace went to the lead. Nobody moved. Nobody got hurt. He was the only horse that really made up any ground in either race, in a race where the pace just held together because these horses were left alone on the front end. The same may happen in here. Field Pass looks like he's on the lead. I don't think Field Pass is getting a mile on 3/8. So in my mind, the speed is going to come back in here. The horse to beat is Sovereign. He comes over for Coolmore, son of Galileo, Irish Derby winner. He didn't have a great four-year-old year. They're going to try him in the States. He gets a rad. He gets Chad Brown. He makes a lot of sense. But I think the most interesting horse on this card this afternoon is Moon Over Miami. I like him. I'm going to play him with Sovereign and a little Gufo who returns for Christophe Clement, who had a day yesterday. Four wins here at Belmont yesterday afternoon for the Clement barn.
You know, you said you get a hard time about picking Bill Mott, but if it's not Bill Mott in a race, it's usually Chad Brown, and you usually go that direction. Now you have both of them, so what the hell? Just play him in the exacta, 1-2. I like that strategy.
And since Kieran retired, the third member of the Mount Rushmore, Christophe Clement, he has Gufo, so I got to pick them 1-2-3 today.
Big A, listen, man, appreciate it. I got to get to this final break. Enjoy talking horses. Enjoy the big day. Good luck at the windows, and we'll catch up soon.
You got it, Aaron. We'll talk soon. Good luck, everyone.
All right. Big A, Anthony Stabile here on HRN. Again, you can catch him all week long as part of our broadcast team with Bobby Newman on all of our weekday programs. Head to horseracingradio.net for a complete HRN show schedule. Back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
And they're into the stretch with Spunderun, the wonder catch coming to the eight pole. Spunderun drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third, but Spunderun has run away. Gerard Ortiz and Spunderun, the real deal in the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainsway Stallion spun to run. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple greatest stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Racing fans, Santa Anita is now open to the general public, so please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating as walk-up admission is not yet available. Join us on Saturday as Phillies and Mares will go a marathon mile and one-half on turf in the Grade 3 Santa Barbara Stakes, and on Sunday, California-bred Phillies and Mares will go 1 mile on turf in the $100,000 Franz Valentine. And make plans now to join us for the middle jewel in racing's Triple Crown, the Preakness Stakes, on Saturday, May 15th. Admission gates will open at 7 a.m. on Preakness Day, and infield admission gates will open at 9 a.m. And if you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet. First post time this Saturday is at 1 p.m., so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap the entire card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live.
This is Chris Landeros. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're- You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
The new Blood Horse Plus, available through BloodHorse.com, provides exclusive, timely, and unmatched content to subscribers, including Fox Sports and Blood Horse branded weekly programs, which are showcasing the thoroughbred industry's upcoming races and recapping recent stakes races, plus a daily detailed stakes winner section and so much more. That's the new Blood Horse Plus on BloodHorse.com. Upgrade today. Well, my thanks to all of our guests who made this show possible, including Gary Falter from Owner View, Francis Relihan talking about Stallion Protonico. Robertino Diodoro was here as well, and Buff Bradley, and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, just moments ago. If you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. Back next Saturday, this show, a Preakness Stakes edition, and of course all of our Preakness coverage in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network beginning 5 o'clock Eastern next Saturday. See a listing of affiliates and SiriusXM channel information on our website as well. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios. For Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers.